Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Past the hour, and we begin this Thursday evening edition of The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid, a somewhat drug-addled Bob Kincaid. I will warn you right off the bat. I try really hard. I stopped taking my pain meds well before noon, so that hopefully by the time 6 o'clock Eastern Time rolls around, I will be... I will be sober. But I'm not feeling real sober right now. Some of that may be the fact that, you know, I haven't eaten in a couple of days. And some of that may be the fact that this stuff stays in your... It sort of accumulates in your system over time. So I'm going to ask a favor of you this evening, if I may, please. And the favor I would ask of you is that if I start sounding in any way like I am even remotely doing Rush Limbaugh Radio... If I start talking about bugs on my skin or in my brain, I can't hear you. I've driven myself deaf. If I start doing any of that, will you send me an email or a call or do something? Hey Bob, close the microphone, okay?
Don't let Bob kick you. I have an eye on you all the time.
The lovely Agnes does. But still, she's not back here watching or listening to the show, so she can't necessarily...
What he doesn't know won't hurt him.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I'm not doing Rush Limbaugh Radio yet. Unless there's, like, lots of slurring going on of which I am not aware. But I'm pretty sure I know what I sound like when I'm doing that. But, of course I can drive. Oh dear. I am not well by any stretch of the imagination, and I'll tell you up front, program note wise, I'm giving strong consideration to taking tomorrow night off, so that I've got 3 solid days: Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, Monday if need be, to rest. And just drug myself and let the pain go away and let the inflammation go down and let everything get happy, happy, happy. We're hoping it works that way. I have already, I was scheduled to be in Washington, D.C. next week for the Families USA conference and be broadcasting from Radio Row. I have already mailed in my regrets on that because I am determined to get better. You see, something came in the mail today. Yeah. Something came in the mail today. And you know what? If that was not a real priority mail envelope containing my official New United States government passport, I couldn't do that with it. Now, I'm looking at my passport, and it is really, really, really exciting to have it in my hands. My passport and Agnes's arrived today, and I'm thrilled. I'm absolutely thrilled. That means we're all set for the coming trip into the warm, blue waters and the islands of the Eastern Caribbean on the Libboat cruise. And, you know, I don't know why the kids took longer. That we applied all on the same day. But I imagine they will be here presently. And that's part of why I've got to absolutely get well. Because who wants to be sick on the first vacation they've had in 12 years? 12? Not, oh, yeah, 12 years. But I am here tonight for reasons that will, well, you know, it's hard to keep me away from the microphone. Because there's always something to talk about. And I really am convinced that this conversation is important. That we have it. That we share it amongst ourselves and hopefully among a growing number of parties to the conversation, both actively and those who prefer to simply listen. Okay, yeah, Ron and Raleigh, check this out. Rush Radio? How about this, Bob? My friends, coming to you with my internal organs tied behind my back. See, that's what Rush Limbaugh Radio would sound like. Darlene says, Agnes has such a wonderful radio voice, very soothing. You haven't heard how she talks to her patients. Get in that bed! No fruit cup! Yeah, that kind of stuff. Darlene says, hope you feel better soon, Bob. Thank you, Darlene. I really, really do, too, because this does not feel good. This feels, let's see, what's the word am I looking for? Bad. This feels really, really bad. But at any rate, I'll try to get through as many hours of the program as I possibly can tonight, preferably three. Less if I just feel crappy. But at any one of the reasons I kind of have to be here is because of something I mentioned last night, and I'm just going to go ahead and say this bluntly. You know, we played around last night, and I talked about, you know, pushing the PayPal button in the bottom of the plate as it passes by during the offertory hymn on prayer meeting Wednesday. Nobody pressed. Well, maybe one person pressed. We are in a what is becoming a severe and deep hole for January. It is Thursday. In any given week, we need 62 members of the Thrifty 250, 62 people a week, to contribute $10 for the month. That works out to, as we've noted before, less than 5 cents per hour for this program. What was the old Pepsi ad way, way, way back when? I remember my Depression-era mother singing it around the house. She had a singing voice almost as good as mine, and it had something to do with nickel, 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 nickel gets a lot. Yeah, in other words, this program costs per hour, based upon 250 $10 contributions per month. This program costs, you ready for it? Less than a Pepsi cost during the Depression. See? And many of you do contribute, and many of you contribute far, far more than $10. And you are the ones who carry the program for a lot of other people. But I know that the podcasts have not been going up right, and I know that, and when that happens, I get a lot of in. I know that there's been issues, and Ben Birch has been working himself crazy. So has John Fox. So we're doing what we can. But the program has not gone away, and neither have the bills. See, even when we have technical difficulties, I don't get to call all of the people that we have to pay to keep this program going and say, you know, we were off the air for a couple of days. Could you prorate our bills by 2 days? No, because see, it doesn't work that way. So that's where we find ourselves. And this week, out of the 62 or so people, we need to contribute $10. That's just the way the averages works out. we've got one? Maybe two? And I told you that we finished last week in a 250-dollar hole. And the fact of the matter is, we have 11 days left in January to come up with $1,500. So that gives you an idea of what we're looking at. And frankly, let's just put it this way. A $250 hole in the second week of January, and what is so far a $605 hole in the third week of January, is a great way for there not to be a February for the horn. Because, see, I know what will happen while I'm gone, while we're gone on vacation. Nothing. And after getting tanned, rested, and ready, I will come back and be digging out of another hole. And I don't like doing that. And I don't like doing this. But I've just got this notion that this is... I'm believing you. You've told me this is worth your time. You've told me... And that is the most precious thing. The main reason that I come in here, even though I feel rather poorly and get behind the microphone, it ain't for money. It's because you tell me that having this forum and this conversation every night matters to you. And you tell me several times a day via email, and you talk about it on the program. And so with that, you give me a sense of purpose, a sense of mission. And so all I can do is tell you that when things get ugly, thank you very kindly. A contribution just rolled in. An intrepid individual, a longtime listener to the program, just stepped up to the plate for 12 people, 12 members of the Thrifty 250. And I appreciate it. Thank you, Cossack. Thank you. So, I had to make mention of that. And I will mention it periodically through the program. Now, it seems to me that the first thing, since I mentioned it last night on the program, one of the first things I need to do tonight is to let you know that in part because of you spreading the word around, and again, you emailed me to tell me that you had, because you spread the word around, members of Coal River Mountain Watch and other environmental organizations, human rights organizations here in Appalachia were able to safely make their voices and their ideas and their pleas for justice heard today at Acting Governor Earl Ray Tomlin's call to arms rally for the coal industry. Everyone is home and safe. And they are safe because of the efforts of people like Jeff Biggers, who shone a really, really bright light on the dirty eliminationism that has a habit of cropping up like, I don't know, zits on a teenager among the coal industry. Because the eliminationist rhetoric and the hate that flows out of the coal industry is nothing if not pustulant and persistent. Jeff Biggers just posted at Huffington Post, you can go and read it yourself, Big Coal's Rally of Denial. Coalfield citizens bring message of growing healthcare crisis to state capital. Besieged citizens from the central Appalachian coalfields faced down acting West Virginia Governor Earl Ray Tomlin and a large crowd of big coal lobbyists and inflamed coal miners. What did I say about zits? Yeah, inflamed. Coal miners at a rally inside the state capitol with their own solemn march on the mounting health care crisis from mountaintop removal mining. While the Friends of Coal-sponsored Call to Arms rally filled the state's rotunda with the fervor of an old-time revival of denial, daggum, that Jeff Biggers, he works with some words. You know what? Jeff Biggers works with words like Picasso worked with paint. Yes. The dauntless coalfield residents paraded with signs that reframed the governor's discussion on the EPA's recent decision to veto the Spruce Mine permit as a reminder of still unrecognized healthcare impacts from the reckless strip mining technique. And I'm hoping that we will hear from my good friend Bo Webb at some point during the program this evening. He was there today. God, I wanted to be there today. But you know what? There was no way. I feel terrible, and I feel just waves of guilt over not being there today. But I couldn't. I couldn't find my butt with both hands earlier today. The stuff I'm on is potent. Of course, the fiends of coal hollered, jobs, jobs, jobs. And I guess they don't care about what, they don't care about, all they care about is jobs. They don't care if the jobs poison, and of course the coal industry doesn't care. The coal industry doesn't care if the jobs poison the people doing them. God almighty, we wouldn't be having 1,000 people per year still in the 21st century of in the United States, dying from black lung if they gave a damn about the job killing the people doing it. But you see, what happens with mountaintop removal, a man who goes underground and takes on the risk of black lung takes that risk upon himself and puts it upon his family. And that is sad enough. That a human being would feel so desperate for money, that an economy would be so thoroughly trashed that the only jobs worth having would be in a dank and gassy hole where grim death stalked daily. That's bad enough. But mountaintop removal takes all those risks that the miner takes and pours them in seas of toxic waste out into communities full of innocents and people who were neither consulted nor agreed with in bearing that waste. People came to Charleston today carrying bottles of toxic waste coal sludge. They brought slurry from their wells and their faucets. They carried signs that listed the health care impacts of mountaintop removal mining. And all they asked was that the people there pay attention. Because, you see, here's what's scary. Even the people there who were supporting coal, even the people who were there supporting it, are being poisoned. That's a fact. If you go and find the Jeff Biggers article, Big Coal's Rally of Denial, Coalfield Citizens Bring a Message of Growing Healthcare Crisis to State Capitol, at Huffington Post, you'll also see some wonderful photographs by a tremendous photographer by the name of Paul Corbett Brown. He has been all over the world. He has used his camera to document human rights horrors literally around the globe. And he can't even come home to his native soil without the human rights crises persisting. And as Jeff Biggers notes, there's some irony. There's always irony, because God is a God of irony. tonight in Park City, Utah, there will be a film premiere. The Last Mountain, a documentary that Tony talked about in our calls both last night and last week. The Last Mountain will screen tonight at the Sundance Film Festival in Park City. And it is all about mountaintop removal and the hell being unleashed in Appalachia. A little bit from the trailer. Apparently a very little bit.
An explosive power the size of a Hiroshima bomb once a week.
They just keep this process up until they literally reduce the mountain to rubble.
Coal River Mountain is our last great mountain. It hasn't been blasted to ashes yet.
Massey Coal, the single most destructive coal mining company in history.
That's your coal dust. And that's what the inside of the kid's lungs are going to look like.
People have had enough, and they're standing up to the coal company.
The fight over Coal River Mountain is a fight about democracy.
Robert Kennedy Jr. is lending his voice.
How can Massey Coal have 60,000 violations and nobody in the state came and stopped them?
We want our kids in a safe new school.
National average for brain tumor is 1 in 100,000, and we had 6 that lived side by side. The only thing we have in common is the fact that we all have well water.
Mountaintop coal mining is literally threatening the water supplies of tens of millions of people.
We live in a very intelligent country that has the ability to create energy without blowing up mountains.
We're looking at a proposal now to construct a wind farm in Coal River Mountain.
That's our last mountain. That's the last one we have.
Corporations do not want democracy. They want profits.
They're bound and determined to knock the mountain down. We're bound and determined to stop it.
It's either them or Massey, and Massey's been winning for a long time.
Coal is mean. Coal's cruel, and coal kills. The American people need to find their position. You're connected to coal, whether you realize it or not. Everybody's connected to this, and everybody's causing it, and everybody's allowing it.
Let them hear your voice in that building back there!
If the American people could see it, there'd be a revolution in this country.
Again, the name of the film is The Last Mountain. It will be screening tonight at the Sundance Film Festival in Park City, Utah. I hope you get a chance to see it. I sincerely do. Because what Maria Gonneau says in that film is so very, very true. We're all connected to it. Everybody is connected to it. You know, after the memorial service for Judy Bonds this past weekend, I had a chance to sit down to breakfast the following morning with Jeff Biggers, and we were just talking about some of the things that need to happen. And Jeff is a very dear friend of the Horn, and he's a friend of yours, whether you know it or not, because his efforts at a just transition away from a coal-fired toxic coal economy in Appalachia and anywhere there is surface mining in this country is predicated upon the proposition that no one in this country deserves to be poisoned just so the lights will go on. There are better ways. But Jeff and I were talking, and we were talking a little bit about the Horn, and I told him that, you know, ours is an ongoing struggle simply to stay on the air. But that one of the goals, one of the long-term goals we have here is to build a studio right here on the mansion property. Not Joe. This is the mansion. Someday I'll send you a picture. No, I won't. But we will build a studio someday, and it will be powered by wind and solar. And the first thing you will hear and the last thing you will hear on every broadcast coming from this place will be that no mountains were harmed. No children were poisoned in the making of the electricity that powers this program. You know, that's probably $25,000-$30,000 worth of work. But it is one of the long-term goals. It was one of the long-term goals when we started, and it remains one. And someday, I am convinced it will happen. And you know what will happen then? This will be the first program on the liberal side of the street to be able to say that. And won't that be neat? I have to think that it will. There is a ton of stuff to go into this evening, but let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
My electricity, no mountains have gone.
No mountains, Susan, but no. certainly surface mining. Yes.
No.
Oregon's power grid is coal-fired.
No, not mine. I pay if I had gone with the regular grid, my electric bill would have been $7. However, I pay three times that much as an extra surcharge to make damn good and sure my power comes direct from wind farms.
That's a beautiful thing. That is an absolutely beautiful thing. But just that's because you make that choice, right?
Exactly.
I don't want you to give anything away, but just for the fun of it, give me a nearby zip code. Not necessarily your zip code, but a nearby one.
97051.
Pardon?
97051. That's St. Helens.
97051.
No, 97. Just a minute. I'm going to have to put this. I can write it better than I can.
Yeah, I know. It's the memory between the hand and the hand and the head. I know what you mean.
Yeah, I think it is 97051.
Okay, that'll be fine. Let's just see something here. Now this is Oregon. Let's see. The power companies supporting this power company serving that zip code include the Portland General Electric Company, owned by Covanta Holding Corp. And it also includes the West Oregon Electric Co-op Inc. of the Bonneville Power Administration, the Clatskanie People's Utility District of Bonneville.
That's pronounced Clatskanie.
I'm sure it is. I've learned. I don't care if the word is S-M-I-T-H. If it comes out of the northwestern United States, I will pronounce it incorrectly. And then there's the Columbia River People's Utility District. No, I know, that's Columbia. And the Bonneville Power Administration. So we can select any one of those. Which would be best? Let's just go with Portland General Electric Company.
They get their power from coal. I can guarantee you that right now. They get it from MTR. It's a scandal.
Yep. Mountaintop removal is connected directly to that power company.
Yeah, and we're constantly after them.
Let's try the West Oregon Electric Co-op.
Try Columbia River PUD.
Okay, hold on. And it's not connected. That is a beautiful thing.
That's my electric provider. They also give you the choice at a price to go strictly wind.
And so you're and it's about three times what coal-fired power would cost?
Yeah. There's not three times per se. There's a surcharge.
Oh, I see.
No, they hit you with a flat charge per kilowatt hour, and you pay that whether or not. But to me, it's worth it because
absolutely. And you know what? That surcharge too, Susan, will go away when enough of your neighbors insist that they don't want to be connected to the destruction of the oldest mountains on Earth.
Yeah, I don't have to worry, you know, I don't have to worry about contributing towards any more little girls having to have their gallbladders taken out or anybody's kidneys being blasted or cancer or ad nauseum.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah. So that's why I did it.
And you know what? I thank you. I thank you, Susan, and everybody here in Appalachia. Well, everybody who's actually involved in human rights and cares about, you know, little girls and little boys and babies unborn and things like that, thank you. The coal thugs, they don't thank you, Susan.
I didn't do it for thanks. I did it so as I could look myself in the mirror.
And there is no overstating the value of that.
Yeah, I just cannot tolerate the thought of anybody else. Because I've seen too many pictures of Kayford Mountain. No, not going to be part of that crap ever.
And see, and what's important is that that alternative presents itself to a lot of people all over the country. I mean, it took us years, but we finally got that option here.
Yeah, and it's amazing. I didn't know, you know, the company. All of a sudden, they just sent out this, you know, they send out this little flyer every month. And I happened to read it, and there was this little goodie that said, you can go wind-powered. And I'm going, oh, yeah?
Exactly.
I had been checking for years about coal, where it came from, but I'm going, wind-powered.
And, you know, granted, we all need to exercise conservation, but by the same token, you don't have the same feeling walking out of a room with the lights on that I do here. My kids will tell you that Daddy's real cranky about that, because I do.
Oh,
they'll walk out of the bathroom and leave the lights on.
Hey.
I follow them and I go, hey guys, is there a ghost in the bathroom?
Bob, got news for you.
What?
My electric bill for the 3 months since my husband died has dropped in half. Do you know why?
No.
Because as much as I loved my husband, he was a rock-headed Irishman who couldn't remember to turn the damn lights off.
No, he was just fond of knowing that wherever he was going, the lights were already going to be on.
And so our electric bill was just ungodly some months.
Well, I do. I walk into the kids' rooms and I say, guys, please. And I've gotten to the point where I no longer just turn it off and tell them I turned it off. I said, come here. Get up. Come here. Go turn the light off in the bathroom.
I learned that at my father's knee. He would follow my mother around, turn the lights off. And I picked that up.
Is that we'll have to rely on our international listeners to tell us. Is that a uniquely American wastefulness? In other countries, do they turn the lights off when they all walk out of the room? As Americans, do we just feel like we've got some God-given right to have brightly lit, empty rooms?
I don't know, but I do know that my father, who went around following my mother, turning off the lights, he was Scotch. And it was, you know, his daughter, I'm Scotch too, and it was therefore my ingrained cheapness that, you know, refused to have anything to do with paying for stuff that I wasn't using.
Well, you know, one of the things, it is so important that we do that kind of thing, that we engage in simple conservation. People getting serious about turning the lights off would reduce the baseload power need in this country significantly, just turning lights off in empty rooms.
Okay, now, here's the reason I called in.
Okay.
And I didn't put the rally on the post. I put it on the post. What I put on the show post was 50 years ago, something happened.
Yes.
And maybe, I guess I'm old.
Well, no,
I watched that happen. I watched it happen.
I thought seriously about just starting the show and running that address, the inaugural address of John Kennedy.
Yeah, and it wasn't. The whole address was magnificent, but it was that one sentence.
Ask not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, I'm also fond of the statement that the torch has been passed to a new generation.
Right. But with that one sentence, he did the impossible. He not only woke up an entire generation of people, but they got up off their duff and they did something. Which, frankly, from what I've read, shocked him silly. He wasn't expecting that. But he inspired an entire generation. The man was murdered 1,000 days later, but his dream is still going.
It is, and by the same token, and I will catch grief for this, you know, he was basically talking about the rising generation of baby boomers. And I, having been born in 1963, I am the next to last year of the baby boom.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But I'm
one of the first.
Yeah, I'm a tail end boomer. And that just sounds gross, doesn't it? But the thing is, he said the torch has been passed to a new generation, and every now and then I look up and I say, hey, wait, whoa. The torch got passed, and then the people that the torch got passed to dropped it in the mud.
No. That's where you're wrong.
But I mean, Iraq, Afghanistan, Ronald Reagan.
Those were. You don't think the torch was passed to them, do you?
No, but they certainly put the Ronald Reagans and the George Bushes in office, didn't they?
No, the torch was never passed to them. The torch was passed to the people who kept the dream alive. All these years, who's kept that dream alive?
Who do you think?
It's the liberals.
Well, that's true. That is true. But by the same token, it sometimes seems like...
We don't have to be in power.
It would be nice if we were. I've been watching the House of Representatives for a couple of days, and trust me, it makes my liver quiver.
Oh, yeah, the latest thing. Got it. I was so angry I couldn't see straight. But up or down, the torch is still there. It may be dimmed, but it's just waiting for another generation to flare it to light.
I hope you're right, Susan. I don't...
And that's all it's going to take.
I hope you're right. I don't have the level of optimism that you do, though, because...
I see
a country in empire, and I don't know how empires get well from being empires.
It's not optimism. It's, what does history do better than anything in the world?
What, repeat itself?
Repeat it, yeah. History repeats. This will happen again. Keep the dream alive. Keep the dream alive. It will come again.
I hope so. I hope so, Susan.
Now, the thing with the House of Representatives, their latest little fun and games, they want to cut a bunch of unnecessary programs. One of which is legal aid.
Yeah, Republicans can't stand legal aid.
Well, I got rather angry, so I called up Chuck Grassley's office and I asked, why does he hate women?
That's fun.
Because
They gotta love you.
But it's true. Why do these people hate women? Battered women.
Yeah.
Because basically what's accessing legal aid are women who are being battered or who are being foreclosed upon. They're women. Poor women.
And it's people, and, you know, people very seldom even think about legal aid, Susan.
No, it's not, quote, legal aid. Legal aid is different, as opposed, this is different from the legal aid that's provided for criminals. Criminals, they get the, that's mandated. Legal services for civilian things, like divorces, foreclosures, that's what they want.
Evictions.
Yes. I mean, okay, my sister was a battered woman, battered wife. And she was able to get a divorce.
Right, they do divorce, absolutely.
Uh-huh. Now, what disease, assuming they are able to cut, and I asked this person at the grassroots almost, I said, hey, what are these women, suppose you get this, succeed in getting rid of this program, so what are these women supposed to do who are being battered? Are they supposed to just sit around waiting until their husbands kill them?
Yes.
Or wait till he goes to sleep and then douse him in gasoline?
No, that wouldn't be Christian. That wouldn't be Christian. They are supposed to submit to their husbands and allow him to kill her. Kill them. And that's a fact. I'm not engaging in hyperbole here, Susan.
No,
the right-wing religion industry and the fundamentalists and so forth are forever talking about how, when he was governor of Arkansas, Mike Huckabee, the guy whose son beat dogs to death. Instituted a program of Christian divorce. Sort of like Sharia law, only fundamentalist Christian.
Yeah, that just blows me away. They're constantly going on about Sharia law. The only thing close to Sharia law I keep seeing is Christian fundamentalism.
Precisely.
And I'm going, guys, wake up. You're being sold to souls. Build goods here. But these people are just insane. They're insane. And what really... this insanity has happened before. I've seen it. In 1963.
Yeah. Yeah, and...
it was really, really sick in 1963.
Well, consider this new bill that's being offered in the state of Florida. Being offered by State Representative Jason Brodeur, or Pig Lickin. It criminalizes any inquiry, verbal or written, by a public or private physician, nurse, or other medical staff regarding the ownership of a firearm by a patient or the family of a patient, or the presence of a firearm in a private home or other domicile of a patient or the family of a patient.
Can you translate that?
Yeah. This right-wing, gun-loving freak in Florida wants to make it a crime, a felony, for a doctor to ask a patient or a member of a patient's family whether or not that person owns guns.
Well, in that case...
Wait, here's the fun part, Susan. If convicted of doing so, the medical provider would be liable for 5 years in prison or a $5 million fine. Now, plain language, what does that mean? Well, this is what that means. Let's say that you have a child and you live in Florida. Not you, but, you know, the ubiquitous
mm-hmm.
you. Let's say you've got a brother, and he lost his job, and his house has been foreclosed on, and he's been walking around talking about, you know what, best thing I could do would be to blow my brains out. Mm-hmm. People talk like that. So you take him to a doctor, and you say, Doc, he's talking about blowing his brains out. The doctor could not then ask, well, does he have access to a firearm? Because asking that question would cost the doctor his medical license, subject him to a $5 million fine, and put him in prison in Florida for 5 years.
I gotta tell you. Some of these people need Thorazine darts really bad.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy's really weird.
I mean, they have, I'm sure Florida has, I don't know, but I'm pretty sure, that Florida has some sort of involuntary commitment process. Here in West Virginia, they're called mental hygiene hearings.
Yeah. They just negate it unless he was talking about it, a knife or a bludgeon of some type.
Ball bat. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Scissors. You know, the doctor, in other words, a doctor can ask of a person subjected to an involuntary commitment, because the statute says public or private physician, the doctor could say, does he run with scissors? But could not ask, does he have a gun?
Well, there's a small problem it's going to run into. It's unconstitutional on its face, because it directly contravenes the HIPAA laws. HIPAA is a federal statute, therefore it is unconstitutional. End of that law right there.
Well, it doesn't make it unconstitutional because it contradicts HIPAA. HIPAA is not in the Constitution.
No, but HIPAA...
It creates a conflict of laws.
Yeah, and... when you have a conflict of laws between federal and state, guess who loses?
You would hope the state law loses.
And if it's going to be HIPAA that loses, I'm going to say, well, Florida doctors.
But that doesn't
say,
no wait.
Don't bother to practice medicine.
But it doesn't impact the mental hygiene laws of the state of Florida, because those are state laws. And so long before, and you would have to have some sort of direct contradiction between HIPAA and this law and get it into federal court. Mental hygiene proceedings aren't had in federal court. They're had in state court.
Yeah, but they're...
And so when you go in there, basically what it means is that, and almost every state's mental hygiene laws are similar in that the question is, one... does the person before the tribunal suffer from a mental disease defect or some form of addiction? If the answer to that question is yes, you go to question two. And question two is, as a result of the mental disease defect or addiction, is the person before the tribunal likely to be a harm to him or herself or others? Either aggressively, either actively or passively. And HIPAA doesn't come into any of that. All the court can say is when the prosecutor or whomever says, and doctor, does this man possess the firearms necessary to carry out the threats that he made? Sir, I cannot answer that question without subjecting myself to a fine of $5 million and a prison term of 5 years. I decline. At which point, the proceeding gets dismissed by the court for want of evidence, and the person making threats against society goes out and maybe goes down to Walmart and buys a gun and does what he meant to do in the first place.
Well, HIPAA comes into it in regards to the confidentiality laws.
But confidentiality laws are not in play in a mental hygiene proceeding.
They're not?
No. The proceeding itself is sealed from public view, But there's no, you have no confidentiality in a lunacy proceeding. They get your records so they can tell whether or not you are mentally ill.
In that case, I have a great way to solve this issue. Let's lock up that Senate state legislator.
Well, he's probably the guy who should be in the rubber room. I don't know if horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner is out there or not tonight, but if I think he would probably agree with me on my analysis, because I'm sure he has sat through his fair share of competency proceedings.
Yeah, I think, personally, I think we need to lock him up.
But you know what?
Preferably in
it's Florida. It's Florida, Susan, and they won't.
Yes. Well.
And B, he will receive a big old boatload of money from the National Republican Rifle Association for having submitted this bill. Whether it gets through the Florida House or not is an open question. But you know what? They're patient.
He got the money.
They're patient. It doesn't have to get through this year. It can get through next year, or the year after that, or the year after that.
He's probably already gotten the money even before he submitted it.
He'll get more.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, anybody who's willing to put this type of thing on the table as a, you know, as a proposed law, you know who owns him.
Yeah.
He's bending over big time to the Rifle Association.
Elaine just wrote in and said it's called the Baker Act in Florida, or at least it used to be, she says. There has to be at least one family member, one member of law enforcement or EMS, and one other person. And that's the, and so the EMS, remember, the EMS is a healthcare provider, and therefore, under this bill, could not testify as to whether or not the allegedly insane person owned firearms.
Oh, lovely.
Again, this kind of goes back to what I said about Jared Loughner, Susan. On the day that he checked the box that said, I ain't crazy, at the gun store in Tucson, the Tucson gun purveyor, by selling him the weapon, de facto expressed an opinion that he was sane. Now, we've seen the pictures of Jared Loughner.
Yeah.
Can you imagine looking across, by God, he looks sane to me.
Yeah, you want to see something really spooky? Go up to Google Images and Google Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yeah, I know, the same eyes, right?
No, no. Physically, they look nothing alike, except for one thing.
The smirk?
The smirk.
Well, Lee Harvey Oswald's smirk is George W. Bush's smirk, if you want to get down to it.
Okay.
Same smirk.
But it's just spooky. It's just, yeah.
I know. Hey, Susan, I got to roll on, dear, but thank you very much. And if I'm not here tomorrow night, I'll talk to you again when I am. I may take tomorrow night off.
Well, drop me a line if you are, and then I can post it.
Okay, I sure will.
Get
talk to you soon.
Hey, everybody.
I sure will.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon. And, by the way, a little update, thanks to, 4 people. Thanks to 4 people, we are out of last week's hole. Four people have stepped in to cover the, nifty 250 slots for 25. So now all we gotta do between tonight and tomorrow night is come up with, 62 more members of the Nifty 250, and we will have covered week 3. But thank you very, very much to you 5, or you 4, rather, you 4, who have dug us out of last week's hole. Thank you very, very, very much. And we go onward. No, we don't. That one turned into a busy signal. So it is about 5 minutes before the hour. Before we go to the top of the hour break, I want to point something else out to you. Speaking of people with guns, we go to Arlington, Massachusetts. You know, we all tend to think, oh, look, blue state. That's, well, that'd be a safe place to live. Don't bet on it. There's a local businessman in Arlington, Massachusetts by the name of Travis Corcoran. Travis Corcoran is a member of a subset of teabag and libertarianism called anarcho-capitalists. Okay. Travis Corcoran recently had put up a blog post in which he said, or, no, it was a Twitter exchange with a reporter by the name of Laura Leslie. In this Twitter exchange, Travis Corcoran said, I assert that the U.S. federal gov has grown unconstitutionally large, and the legislature exceeds the powers delegated to it by the people. As per the Declaration of INDEP, remember, the Declaration of INDEP is not the law of this here land, because it precedes the Constitution and was not incorporated in the Constitution by reference. As per the Declaration of INDEP, when a gov becomes destructive those ends, it may be abolished. And the most moral approach is that which spares the maximum number of lives. Thus, assassination is a legitimate tool. On his blog, he posted, with regard to the shooting of Representative Gabrielle Giffords, one down, 534 to go. He was upset about the bystanders who got shot. He said, it is absolutely, absolutely unacceptable to shoot indiscriminately, target only politicians and their staff, and leave regular citizens alone. One down, 534 to go. Well, this week, the police in Arlington, Massachusetts seized what they are referring to as a large amount of weapons and ammunition from Travis Corcoran. And he lost his gun license. Police are investigating the suitability for him to have a firearms license. Eleven firearms were removed from his residence and ammunition. By the way, his business, he runs an online comic book shop. You see, what's important about this story is to realize that these right-wingers, these bloodthirsty, masturbating over corpses right-wingers, these teabaggers, don't talk about things like ammunition and reloading and armed and dangerous and assassination from an academic standpoint. They have the firearms with which to back up their assertions. That's why every time I hear somebody say, oh, well, we need to have a revolution, my inclination is to say, are you nuts? I saw somebody in the reprint of Jeff Biggers' article about the call to arms rally that was over at Alternet. I saw a couple of guys in there commenting, saying, you know what we need to do? We need to get more violent. And I called one of them out. I said, you know, I can spot an agent provocateur from a mile away. Now go collect your check from Massey and move along. This is not an academic discussion. This is not parlor talk. the right wing means to have bloodshed in American streets. And they will not be happy until they do. I got proof. As if you didn't. This is the Thursday night edition of America's Liberal Voice, The Horn. Listener supported. Your phone calls, of course, are always welcome. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333, and email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. We'll be right back. Green News Report is on its way with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. This is The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, January 20, 2011.
California retreats from the rising ocean. Update in the investigation of the nation's worst coal mine accident in 40 years. The growing season is growing longer. Plus, don't tell Fox News, the Chinese president is a global warming alarmist.
The United States and China have a responsibility to combat climate change by showing the way to a clean energy future. And President Hu indicated that he agrees with me on this issue.
All that climate change alarmism and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
It is not customary for the EPA to tell, you know, car companies how to run their business, which is what we're seeing here, right?
Right, Martha McCallum of Fox News. It's not customary for the EPA to have anything to do with car companies, other than regulating them under the Clean Air Act, setting national standards to reduce carbon monoxide emissions and other pollutants from motor vehicles, including tailpipe emissions, new vehicle technologies, and clean fuel programs, like they have been doing ever since they were created in the 1970s by Republican President Richard Nixon. Other than that, Martha, you're absolutely right. Fox News, the most disinformative name in news. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, the president of China, Hu Jintao, is here in the country, and I'm going to try for the next 6 minutes to not make any Hu jokes.
No, who's on first?
I'm not going to do it.
Well, go figure. Who is on first? The president of China, Hu Jintao, is in Washington this week for an official state visit focusing on business relations between the two countries. In a joint press conference on Wednesday, President Obama outlined a number of new agreements, including new trade and export deals totaling over $45 billion and a deepening partnership on clean energy and climate change.
We're moving ahead with our U.S.-China Clean Energy Research Center and joint ventures in wind power, smart grids, and cleaner coal.
President Hu, speaking through a translator, for his part listed climate change as one of the top three issues facing the two nations.
President Obama and I exchanged views on major international and regional issues, including the situation on the Korean Peninsula, the Iranian nuclear issue, climate change, and others.
So this is extraordinary. You've got the president of China, the president of the United States, ranking climate change right up there with Iranian nuclear power and the powder keg on the Korean Peninsula. And yet back here in this country, across the entirety of the media, but certainly the right-wing media, certainly Fox News, they consider the entire thing a hoax, not even worth discussing.
Yep.
And in the House of Representatives, which the Republicans have just taken over, they have done away with the committee that had looked at global warming and climate change.
It's an incredible disconnect. And in the meantime, the Chinese government's long-term strategy to become the world leader in clean energy has netted yet another U.S. solar panel manufacturer. Evergreen Solar, the nation's third largest solar panel maker, is the latest to announce it is closing its U.S. factories and moving operations to China. Officials at Evergreen bluntly said the move is due to the Chinese government offering them billions of dollars in research, development, and support.
Also incredible, this huge solar market, which is being snapped up, bought up by China instead of us.
And Evergreen said very clearly it wasn't just because labor costs are lower, it's because the Chinese government offered them billions in additional support.
They are willing to invest. We are not. We are going to pay this price for quite some time, I'm afraid.
Federal investigators have released a preliminary report on the causes behind the coal mine explosion last April. 29 miners died in the massive explosion at the Upper Big Branch mine in West Virginia, the worst mining accident in 40 years. The investigation by the Mine Safety and Health Administration is ongoing, but their preliminary conclusion is that several factors are believed to have contributed to the explosion. Sounding eerily similar to the BP oil disaster, the investigators found that corporate officials ignored multiple warnings from their workers that dangerous conditions were building up in the mine and that machinery and safety equipment was either missing or in disrepair. Meanwhile, the scientific data on global warming continues to pile up. New data shows that the growing season in the Northern Hemisphere is now 12 days longer on average than it was in 1982. And another new study shows the Colorado Rockies snowpack is melting some 3 weeks earlier than it did 100 years ago. Finally, they are the first, but they won't be the last. Officials in the coastal town of Ventura, California, 60 miles from Los Angeles, are retreating, literally. The town has announced it will spend millions to relocate a parking lot and an eroding beachfront bike path 65 feet inland in preparation for what climate scientists predict could be a sea level rise of nearly 5 feet over the next 90 years. It's called managed retreat, and it's increasingly a part of the long-term urban planning in coastal cities around the world.
Doesn't that eroding asphalt bike path know that global climate change and rising sea levels are just a hoax? For more on that and the stories we didn't get to today, please check out our website, greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please support listener-funded radio telling the truth on your public airwaves by hitting that PayPal button in support of the Green News Report. Are you proud of me? I didn't make a single who joke the entire time. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Bubble Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No, see, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap, there's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius. We got your soap right here.
And don't forget about that body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Minutes past the hour. This is the second hour of the program for this Thursday night. I'm Bob Kincaid, and so far I haven't had any warnings of Bob, you're doing drug-addled Limbaugh radio. So maybe my sober up regimen seems to have been working. We can only hope. So by all means, let's continue onward. You know the phone number, right? 877-443-2366. 877-4, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Right? See how easy? Yeah, I know. But above all, yeah, let's do go to the phones and see what's happening. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Yes, Sandra.
Hey, so you sound better. What are you, high? No, I don't mean to tease you, but...
No, I'm really... really high. Yes.
No, but I think you...
They call it hillbilly heroin for a reason.
Yeah.
And I, the hillbilly, can testify.
Well, I think you should do what you say you're going to do and take off those 4 days, get yourself right. Not just for the show, but your wife ain't going to be happy if you're not top-notch. You understand what I'm saying?
I copy. Roger that.
You know, what the hell? Anyway, that's all my advice for you. You really should just rest up because, you know, you have a lot to look forward to.
Hear, hear. And like I said, I can't tell you, Sandra, what went through my... When I got that passport in my hands, it was like, holy cow!
That's sort of... Yeah, you're
that's a moment.
You're officially a world citizen now. I mean, i.e., you can... escape.
Yeah, right. You know, I can get out.
Yeah. Well, did everyone get set up for their passport? Or?
Well, that was the weird thing. We applied all on the same day.
No, it's coming out like that, huh? Dribs and drabs.
Yeah, Agnes and I got mine. Got ours today, and so I guess the kids' will arrive later.
Well, is there a follow up number anywhere?
Oh yeah. And you can track it on the track it on the website too.
Mm.
So yeah. when we got our two, we called and The kids, and that's the kids are in process. That's all they could tell us.
Okay, well, long, yeah. Well, if yours is there, you should get everything. When do you leave, on the 4th or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, you have plenty of time. Anyway, the other reason why I'm calling is this Social Security business. I mean,
I read the articles, and that's just... I'm so not okay with all of this.
No, but it's really interesting because the polls are coming fast and furious. People are, like, not interested. They're not hearing anything to do with effing with those programs. I mean, imagine the specter of this government bailing out these banks non-ending and then turning around and even implying that they may attack these two programs. People are just not having it. It's interesting. And everyone I speak to, they're like, they may not understand much, but they understand that, and they're not happy about it. I mean, this one poll I'm just reading in the New York Times is like, cut the Pentagon. Given choices, the population is like, yeah, raise my payroll taxes and cut the Pentagon. This is what's coming out.
And you know, for an opinion by the American public, that is surprisingly sane.
Yeah, and it's pretty much constant, too. That's the thing. It's like the inside beltway, the bubble people, the president and all these people actually think. Just the virtue of him talking about this is driving people away from the Democratic Party, just if these polls are any indication. And common sense would say that, too, because like we had talked before, if they don't stand for Social Security, there's no reason to associate with the Democratic Party. I'm sorry.
There's not much left at that point. And what kind of threw me out of the story you sent me earlier today from The Hill, the paragraph that just grabbed me was, political analysts say Obama could win a second term by relying on a massive turnout of minority and young voters and appealing to upscale suburban voters. So am I to take away from that, Sandra, that some genius in the White House has told Barack Obama that the way to win re-election is to tell all of those people that you're going to gut Social Security?
Well, it's absurd because the party, the actual party, not the neoliberal president, is saying, dude, you better step the hell off. We're not going to be elected. I mean, they, the Congress, they know what time it is. And you don't think the GOP would run on that? Did this bitch cut your Social Security? The fact that the GOP is getting higher marks for handling Social Security is mind-numbing. And if they're that stupid in the White House, then they goddamn deserve to lose. Because, see, I'm finished if he attempts to raise the retirement age or means test it to turn it into some sort of welfare program, the number of other horror shows that they have on offer for us, I'm done. Because there's no reason for this.
Well, and that's that cynical politics of... lesser of two evils again.
No, but that's a bunch of BS. And what I'm looking at, which is somewhat encouraging, is that across, you know, the polls are like, oh, you need, and I think it comes from what I was saying before, is that everyone saw them bail out the financial interest. That hasn't faded. So to turn around now, it's just not playing that well. Because people see, well, wait a minute, sacrifice is only coming on one side yet again. You're going to cut our fire department, you're going to cut our police, and now you want to completely eviscerate the two pillars of the safety net that we have. Now, I think that this is something that everyone can kind of understand, and the fact that some damn Democrat president is, and I say Democrat, too, I'm using that language because they're pissing me off. It's like, well, what are you? What do you stand for?
And what's left?
It's just... You can sit there with that president from China and try to agree with the fucked up trade policy we got. I mean, it's really outrageous. And I just think it's, you know, just sort of the, William Guyer, I guess his name is. I don't know. He writes for The Nation. Yeah, he wrote this whole article about, you know, the sort of death of New Deal liberalism and how that's what we're facing at the hands of this administration. Now, I could be wrong, and, you know, we can have this conversation on Wednesday, after, I guess, the State of the Union is Tuesday.
Right.
I mean, I sent all sorts of, I mean, I've signed every, you know, and I've actually called, and I sent this all, this petition all to everybody that I know. They're probably thinking, what the hell? Because I usually don't do that because I don't, you know, some of this sort of petition signing is kind of just sort of running in circles. It's like a substitute for actual real connection.
Right.
So I try to avoid it because I'm just not into it. I think that it's a bit of a faulty problem with the whole blogosphere, that operation. But in this case, I sent it to family members and everybody else I could think of because they can relate. They'll see that. Everyone knows what Social Security is. Everyone knows what Medicare and those sort of programs are. It's not, I don't have to have a long tie-in to make them understand. Because this is it for me. I don't understand why Obama would be a party to this. He doesn't have to.
It's one of those Jesus Barack moments, Sandra.
Well,
who in the White House? Because the article on the Hill makes it from the Hill makes it clear that it's not coming from the Democratic Party as a whole.
That's what I'm saying. That's because they know what time it is on that level. I mean, why do you think Reid came out strong like he did? He must be, you know, he must be seeing what we're seeing.
That's the only conclusion you can reach. But the question is, who in the White House is saying that this is a good idea? I mean, is this Barack Obama's own idea? I sound like an owl is what I sound like. Never mind the drugs, but who is telling him this is a good idea?
It's just incredible that we're going to cut a program now to solve a problem 30 years down the road that ends up cutting anyway. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. You know, you're destroying a
program. But it's also part and parcel. The other thing that doesn't make any sense is the fact that it's part and parcel of an ongoing lie that Social Security is a broken program, and it's not.
Exactly. And nothing's ever talked about if you do want to make it stronger, how about raising the ceiling to $170,000 a year? They don't even discuss that, and it's obscene. And like I said, we can have this conversation on Wednesday. I don't know if enough pressure is coming now with these, you know, New York Times running this poll, the Washington Post had
Well, I hate all the nine-dimensional chess business. But, you know, is this what that is? You know, we're going to float this out there and let the people shoot it down, and then I can say that I've got the people behind me and I'm doing the people's business?
Well, see, but we've never seen him operate that way before. All I've seen was scare the hell out of people and say, well, you have to do this now or else. That's the only triangulation that's been happening since the Bush administration with the, oh, my God, we need $700 billion or everything's going to crash. And we've been under the gun, had the gun pointed to us ever since for everything else. So, you know, the people don't seem to matter because the people keep saying cut the Pentagon. I mean, that's like a growing chorus of people are like, damn. Can we pull back on that now before you start coming after? Because Social Security is so much more than just whatever these Republicans are saying it is. Everyone has parents. You see what I'm saying? This is why the intergenerational business of divide ain't working.
Right, Mr. and Mrs. Relatively young married 30-somethings do not want to move mom and dad, you know, both sets of in-laws, into the spare bedroom.
That's what I'm saying. That's why that's like a no-win, that whole business that Obama worried about the younger, you know, screw that. That bit of politicking don't even make no sense. Because, see, the problem with Social Security is that it's so thoroughly entrenched and it's across the board, as it should be, it's really hard for them to step up and now all of a sudden say, oh, no, we need to cut it now because of what? It's not working? No, it's working great.
Yeah, but to go back to what you mentioned earlier with the cap, you know, you mentioned 170 million.
That's 70,000.
Yeah, 170,000.
Right.
Screw that.
All the way up.
All of it,
and then lower the time you can retire and pay more benefits. That's
right.
what That's what could happen. And instead of having this sort of meager stopgap to destitution, make it a viable minimum income type of program. You know.
It's not hard to fathom. And in fact, I had a back and forth discussion with Benedict, Benny in the chat room, talking about the fact that the one thing nobody talks about is that the smart thing to do would be to not raise, but lower the retirement age.
Oh, no, I know. And it's just sort of, you know, you have competent economists, you know, sort of co-signing with Galbraith on that, because that's his plan. And it makes sense, because even if you argue that, oh, eventually we'll get out of this recession and jobs will come back, who knows? It's structurally changed. If you're going to keep these trade policies like you are, something has to give. So why not let older people, older workers, get the hell out from under? Those jobs will open up, and, you know, problem solved.
And the funny thing is, Sandra, that the right wing always talks about, remember George H.W. Bush and his 1,000 points of light?
Yeah.
You know, those were the headlights of 500 pickup trucks with the battery going dead from the people who were living in them.
Or 1,000 cuts, yeah.
Yeah. They want people to go and work in charities and so forth, because that's the noblest expression of yada, 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 yada. Well, you know what? If you let somebody who has done what he or she didn't want to do for 30 years, if you let them go and do what they... afford them their Social Security, and then let them go and do whatever human rights or community service they want to do.
Well, yeah.
Because there is certainly, I can tell you for a fact, there is no career, there is no money in doing things like the local community advocacy. You can't pay your bills, and the only people who can really afford to work in it are people fresh out of college who are living six to a house.
No, I mean, obviously the powers that be, that's their worst nightmare. They don't want people to be freed up to be free. I mean, this is what we're talking about. I get sick of them people talking about our freedoms. No, our freedoms are tied up in, A, being able to see a goddamn doctor when you need to, and, B, not having to work 24 hours a day to pay your bills. That is all economic. My economic freedoms are as important at this point as political. Now, that's it.
That's the absolute truth, because it doesn't matter what kind of political freedom you claim you have if you are a debt slave. And it's everywhere, Sandra. I mean, you know where I live, and you know the stuff that I work in. We could have a conversation with the people who work in mountaintop removal, you know, less than 4,000, but supposedly the entire engine of the West Virginia economy runs on 4,000 people. But the fact of the matter is, they make good way. I mean, you got a guy who dropped out of high school in his junior year and learned to run a D9 cat, and he does it on a mountaintop removal site. He's 60 pounds overweight. But he makes as a high school dropout, he makes about $50,000-$60,000 a year. And there just aren't a lot of $50,000-$60,000 a year jobs out there for high school dropouts. But the thing is, because he is a high school dropout, he missed that senior basic econ class, and he's got a bunch of credit cards that are all maxed out, and he maxed them out buying his wife a tanning bed and a hot tub, and buying himself fancy hunting rifles, and he buys a new car every 3.5 years, new truck, car for her, and he's got the house payment. And he is, even at $60,000 a year, he is a bigger slave than some minimum wage workers.
Right. Oh, no, no. I mean, the sort of, it's you know, it's so bad that I don't understand how these, you know, business, one thing I learned, one of the first things that struck me when I took microeconomics, was this whole statistic that corporations generate 89% of the revenue, but small businesses provide 75% of the damn jobs.
That'll stop you in your tracks for a while.
I was like, what the? So, when we see that these corporations, when I see that they're sitting on it, I'm like, yeah, that's why. And then they tighten the credit so the businesses that are generating 75% of the jobs can't get credit. The union movement has been destroyed, so those workers, there's no contravailing force, which is what the union movement would provide.
Now, speaking of the union movement, and this is off topic, but did you see the business in South Carolina today? The machinists union had to sue brand spanking new, well, probably shouldn't say spanking in light of the allegations, but brand new Governor Nikki Haley. Machinists union had to sue her because she just bald face stood up and said, we are going to keep that damn union out of the Boeing plant. What? Is that an honest broker? I mean, how? Since when do governors do that?
Yeah, no, it's incredible. I mean, this is, I'm telling you, it's like 18, pick your date. And the thing is that all of a sudden, there's no labor laws are out the window. These people are exercising authority that they don't have. Collective bargaining is a goddamn human right. This is the thing that I'm always shaking
the rest. Of. Yeah, the rest of the civilized world tends to see it that way. Absolutely.
Well, it's part of, you know, it's, anytime you look at declarations of human rights, you know, you have these sort of economic rights that keep popping up, and that's one of them. And so the fact that it's such so distorted and weak in this country now, anyway, I don't know. I'm just, the whole gist of this is the Social Security is a huge part of the economy, though. For them to want to be messing with it is stunning.
Well, it's not stunning. And that's what that was my question, Sandra, about who's telling him this. Ultimately, I think it's Harold Ford and the DLC types. That's their idea. I think they're the ones telling Obama that.
Though.
Pardon?
I just don't see the advantage.
Nor do I. Except for the fact that they've got some silly-ass notion that they'll win Republican and so-called moderate, independent, undecided voters by doing it, which makes absolutely no sense to me, because that means that they still think it's like the conversation we had about the, you know, his approval rating among teabaggers has gone from 8 to 22.
Is that right?
Well, remember, I'm on drugs, but I seem to remember that from last night's show. But his...
Okay.
So, let's assume that to be true. So what? But there's some sort of an assumption out there that, and again, it's terrible politics, and it's short-sighted, and it's even a little Pollyanna-ish, if you will, to think that there's anything. There is nothing. There is nothing. And I don't know, I don't want, God forbid he was actually listening to the show. Barack, I'm not trying to hurt your feelings. You're a nice guy, I guess. But there is nothing you're going to do to make the teabaggers love you or any Republican.
Well,
Republicans are straight ticket voters.
Well, then it's just the constituency of capital finance, then. That's the only thing I can think of.
That's all that's left, isn't it? That's all that's left, isn't it?
Well, I'm just saying that must be because this policy is not going to appeal to anyone because, like I said, if I was a Republican running, as soon as that happened, I'd be okay, right. And I'd be running on Obama cutting your Social Security the next day, every day.
Well, it's they're going to run in 2012 on Obama wants to raise your taxes.
Oh, yeah, but they can throw in Social Security if he's dumb.
And cut, and if you add in and cut your Social Security, life is easy. And just because it's part of an ongoing discussion you and I and the rest of the Horn family have had, I got an email from our buddy Tom out on the West Coast today. And it was simply entitled Jebby.
Oh, right.
And Tom said, well, Bob, I just heard Tom Hartman say that he thinks it will be Jeb Bush in 2012 or else 2016.
Oh, they biting our shit.
And Tom said, I think maybe you backed away from that too soon. After all, you made the potentially serious error of believing anything a Bush says when he said he wouldn't run.
No, but they biting. you know.
Yeah.
Well, I still think...
Well, I think maybe the light went on for a lot of people last week that no way in hell could Sarah Palin ever be president of the United States.
Well, yeah, no, I just was sort of slack jaw because it continued with her. She doesn't seem to, I don't know.
And I love the fact that who did they go to for comment on it? Newt Gingrich, who is also sitting there playing with the idea of running for president. Asking him to comment on it. Well, she needs to watch her words.
Didn't Hood and Cross come out and say, oh, the GOP need to calm down because they really don't have all the power? Wasn't that Haley Barbour who said that?
I do believe so, yes. Hood and Cross.
I was like, oh, what's going on? But anyway.
That's his new name, Hood and Cross Barbour. Hood and Cross Haley.
You know, listen, I'll let you go because... You know, so I sort of made myself a bit ill.
Sorry. I know the feeling. About 9:01 p.m., I'm back on the Limbaugh stuff.
Oh, God. Well, yeah, you take care.
All right. See you, Sandra.
Bye.
Bye now. Sandra calling from California and onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Chris from Nanaimo.
Well, hey, Chris, how are you?
Got something that's been bugging me. We don't hear a hell of a lot internationally on our side of the fence, as it were. It's usually only what literally just scrapes by, what they can't afford reporting, you know, earthquake in Somalia and such, you know, world-shattering events. And usually we get that because some guy in our country, you know, reported that, you know, we detected an earthquake over there. Not that they reported that they had an earthquake, just, you know, our magnificent science has detected it.
Right.
And I got this thing in this mail, the mail today, this thing called The People's Voice. Believe it or not, it's a publication by the Canadian Communist Party.
I didn't know there was one.
I didn't either, not really. Title, The People versus U.S. Steel. And I got this whole thing on just, you know, the U.S. Steel violating its agreement with the Canadian government regarding shutting down of the Hamilton Steelworks. And then they've got a section called, get this, Global Class Struggle, a section, sort of like economy. Deadly poultry plant in Australia, Brazil minister backs air workers, Burmese migrant worker protests, minimum wage struggle in Egypt. Did you know Egypt had a minimum wage struggle? I didn't.
No. And I'm not laughing. I mean, no, I didn't.
Hong Kong sets minimum wage. Hong Kong is now up to $4.70 an hour. Bus unionists released in Iran. Apparently, they had this big protest, the union, and they arrested a couple of the bus drivers or whatever, union reps, and they released two of them a couple weeks ago. I remember hearing about that. Now they've released the other two. So apparently, Iran is far more labor-centric than many countries I can think of. Oh, yeah, and the one I thought was neat was life imprisonment for Argentina's executioner. George Videla, the ex-dictator of Argentina, was sentenced for the murder of 11 disappeared persons, that wonderful phrase that he gave us. So he's in prison forever, and they had all kinds of stuff on that. Whole page just dedicated to something really important. Rapa Nui people attacked by Chilean police, you know, the native people of Rapa Nui, the, you know, Easter Island.
Yes.
There's a little expose on the gang up on the Ivory Coast by just imperialism. What the hell? They go after Don Cherry. That's sort of a Canadian thing. Celebrating working class heroes, and they go over historical working class heroes who have made great strides and all that. And, you know, this is the memory hole. This is all the stuff that we were supposed to have accomplished back in your time, and here it is. And it's like, it's the bloody communists who keep track of this. What about everybody else in our society? You know, saying we can hang our hats high because the Canadian invented the zipper and all these other things that, you know, apparently I can only get from the communists. And that just strikes me as strange because apparently the communists are the only legitimate political party in Canada that actually seem to give a damn.
Or actually are paying attention.
Exactly. And it's like, you know, where do these people come from that, you know, A, keep all this stuff in their head and don't have it all pushed out by Dancing with the Stars and such? I mean, what kind of people are they? Is this some sort of genetic thing or what? Or is it just that they're so out of touch with reality that the only thing they can focus on are these esoteric things? And then how do you get them all together, you know, the herding?
Well, I tend to side with the latter, Chris. And I also will, as ever, throw in a soupçon of it's so much more fun to pay attention to celebrity gossip.
Mm.
I mean, I can't tell you the number of places that I've seen in the last 4 days. Vast amounts of coverage and conversation and discussion about Ricky Gervais and how mean he was to the Scientologists at the Golden Globe Awards. And see, I just did it too.
I heard about that as a headline news thing, but I never actually looked it up or listened to him because, you know, it's not important. I mean, it's like Scientology is the low-hanging fruit of the religion industry. I mean, it's like, I'm going to make some fun of Scientologists today. Water's wet, and that little kitten over there, you could probably kick it, but what would be the point?
Precisely. But it's easy. And people fall for it. I mean, you know, the promos are out. The new season of American Idol begins soon. Finally, once again, this year, you'll have something you actually care about voting for. And you know, that's the American body politic in a nutshell. Remember, more people will vote for the winner of American Idol than will vote for the president in two years. And that's sort of one of those signposts that says, you know, this way lieth the apocalypse. Abandon hope, all ye who enter here.
I think you lost your country a long time ago, Bob. I really do.
Oh, I have no doubt.
Your country has a bunch of viewers and consumers, and you know, they have America's a brand logo. It's like McDonald's. I go to McDonald's, so I'm a McDonaldsianoid or something. I mean, people have more of an affiliation with the pop they drink than with the country they live in. So, you know, this whole ultra corporatization of the people, this whole dystopian view that they said, oh, people will start wearing corporate logos instead of flags on their shoulder patch to show their affiliation. I work for Coke, so I'm a Cokeanoid, and I...
Yeah, because Cokehead is taken.
Distribute Coke. No, yeah. But, you know, that's...
But understand, Chris, that's part of the genius of the Republican Party. They branded America. That's why we're obnoxious at golf tournaments and Olympic matches, because we sit in the stands chanting USA, USA, USA.
Yeah, Canada's not much better with their big flag that they always sneak into any Olympic venue and flutter around during the.
Yeah, but there's something charming about a whole bunch of people. Oh, Canada! Yeah, that's charming. But the martial insistence of USA, USA, and you know, they're mad at somebody. They want to go beat somebody over the head with the letter U. And you're right. The question is not did we lose our country, Chris? The question is, did we lose it irrevocably?
I can't see how you can come back from it. The voting machines, the Republicans, the teabaggers. The teabaggers apparently control anywhere between 20 and 30%, depending on the poll, of your population. The gullible, stupid people. These people will be manipulated by anyone who has a voice. So if it's the right wing that has control of your media, the gullible people will follow them just because they have the big talking megaphone. And it's like, if there's so much smoke, there must be fire, kind of philosophy that idiots come up with.
Right, and you're absolutely right. That percentage is just enough. It's not enough to win an election, but it is enough to turn an election.
Yeah, but if you have people on the right in addition to the gullible tards in the middle, then you've got, oh, here's a small 20% left wing, 30% centrist, and another 10%, 20% right wing. If you have the gullible morons and any one of those groups together, you form basically a voting bloc. And if you can get the people in the center thinking, oh, they're all the same, and either get them to withdraw from the election or at least split down the middle, then you have effective control over the country. Because, again, it's control of the media. As long as you control the village idiot, you control the village in the United States.
Oh, man, that's a bumper sticker. That really is. I'm not trying to. No, as long as you control the village idiot, you control the village.
I know. His stomach dropped out as I heard it myself say it, though. But I've been talking with the people in my cabs, and the strange thing is, I shouldn't find the demographic of 100% agreement on anything. You know, trapped in a small tin can, people tend to be very agreeable, you know, when you're driving them about, especially if they're paying for the privilege. But everybody agrees that, you know, the whole concept of, I've been writing about this by my poor customers, the insanity test. It's something unique to computer science. When we have a variable, we see, okay, we're going to have this variable hold the age of the people being inputted into the database. Triple digits is probably too much, but we'll give it triple digits. Quadruple digits, definitely way too much. We don't handle Methuselah. Methuselah will just accept him as having a special card that gets him through walls and secret security passes and all that stuff. And negative numbers, oh, not so much. That's an insanity test. You know, he's putting a number in insane. And you apply this all the time in computer science, but nobody ever applies it to society, social system, government system, economic system. Is there a point where gun control came up recently, and I've been discussing that with people at great length, and I'm of the opinion that, you know, you apply an insanity test for ammunition. If you need more than 3 bullets in your gun to hit a target, you are a very bad shot and a liability to everybody around you. If you're in the army and somebody said, I can't hit what I'm aiming at without more than 3 bullets, the sergeant would take the gun away from this person until they learned how to hit better or shoot better.
Well, that's true.
The only legitimate use of a large capacity clip is to lay down covering fire or to lay into a mob of people. There is no legitimate reason anyone who is not in the military or potentially even the police, God help us, it may come to that, to lay into a mob of people. I don't want my neighbors having the ability to lay into a mob of people. Anybody who says, I want to have the right to lay into a mob of people with overwhelming firepower, is a monster, and thus they are not legitimate. Their opinion should not be polled.
Well, under the parameters that you just set forth, Chris, I got to ask you a question. Are you familiar with the interview that Lawrence O'Donnell conducted with Representative Trent Franks a couple of nights ago on MSNBC?
I heard rumors of it.
O'Donnell just launched he lit into Representative Franks because Franks, who is a just vitriolic, frothing at the mouth, somebody get a shot, you know, like an it needs to be inoculated for rabies kind of thing, supporter of firearms and the NRA. And O'Donnell, and for neither love nor money, would Trent Franks agree with the proposition that a standard clip in Jared Loughner's pistol would have done considerable damage, but that deaths, that bullets 11 through 30 were solely because of expanded capacity magazines.
Seriously, do we have a lot of hunters that claim Bambi is laying down covering fire against you? I mean, covering fire is to suppress on return fire, and if Bambi's pulling out heat, you got bigger problems than a high capacity clip.
Well, remember that high school dropout that I was talking, well, maybe you didn't hear, that I was talking with Sandra about? The high school dropout who makes $60,000 a year driving a D9 Caterpillar on a mountaintop removal site?
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to spend his excess wealth on a piece of art. He's probably not going to spend it on fancy furniture. He's going to spend that money on expensive firearms, okay? And holding more bullets, better gun. It's a very simple expression of flawed logic. If it holds more bullets, it's a better gun. I have deer hunted, Chris. When I deer hunted, I had a Browning rifle with a scope on it, and it had a 5-round magazine that popped into the bottom and a bolt-action receiver so that, you know, fire, bolt, new cartridge, fire.
Yeah, you had a scope, and you had enough ammunition to take down a deer, because if a deer is not a blue whale, and you're out there hunting, not proving what an incredible genetic specimen you are, so you had a scope, and you expected to kill the animal for the purposes of eating it.
Well, all of that is true. But by the same token, when my buddy and I would walk out onto the hillside and find us a nice place to sit still and wait at sunrise. I will never forget this day. It was a beautiful, clear, cold November morning in maybe 1995. And while we're appropriately dressed and wearing our blaze orange vests so that, you know, some eager young hunter wouldn't decide that we were two-legged deer. And we'd just gotten settled in, and we're all quiet and everything and waiting, and you can almost hear the strains of Tchaikovsky in the background, you know, the na-na-na-na-na-na-na, yeah, that one.
Mm-hmm.
When lo and behold, a guy comes flying up past us on his four-wheeler, with you know, and those things make enough, when they're opened up, those things make enough noise to raise the dead.
Maybe he's looking for dead antelope.
And he goes flying up to the ridgeline, comes to a screeching halt, takes his AK-47, and unloads the clip at something. So, you know, our little place where we were going to quietly hunt was done for. But, and his name was Daryl. And he became known as Melt the Barrel Daryl, because my buddy sitting next to me goes, oh, Jesus, Melt the Barrel Daryl, because he, blam, 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 because it's a semi-automatic. All you got to do is squeeze, no bolt action, nothing. And there's, you know, 5 or 10 or 15, bam, 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 bam. It sounded like a war. And here's the fun part, and this goes back to deer hunting and laying down covering fire. If you take sight at a deer, and you miss on shot one, you're probably not going to be able to sufficiently lead him to get him on shots 2 through 15. He just wanted to shoot his shooting arm gun. But it wasn't any fun at the range, Chris. It's got to be something alive at risk.
Can't they put out fuzzy little bunnies like they do for the greyhounds on the bloody firing ranges so these idiots have some sort of cathartic release that's, oh, no, not sexual, not at all, no.
No. Well, and that's the funny part. There's a lot of people in rural America, and they are uniformly condemned by so-called ethical hunters. We had a terrible problem with it. We have a terrible problem with it all over West Virginia. One guy drives... He's got him a cold can of Budweiser, or usually maybe even Milwaukee's Best, in a snuggy sleeve, and he's driving, and his buddy's got a short-barreled 30-30 carbine, and they drive along back roads in the middle of the night with a 2 million candle power spotlight that's plugged into the accessory socket of the pickup truck. And they scan the fields until they see a deer, and they put the spotlight right in the deer's eyes, and then they just shoot it and drive on until they see another one and shoot that one too. Now, bear in mind, Chris, these are the same people who go to teabag rallies.
I heard them described in about a 100-year-old book, still under publication, called 10 Acres Is Enough, and he talked about these idiots who would come onto his property and shoot all these songbirds that he had been intentionally foistering. Yes, they take a little bit of grain, he said, but they keep the pests almost non-existent. And then we had these idiots walk up and start shooting on our property, and I put my gun, I cocked my gun, I went out there, and my wife had her gun, and my daughter had her gun, and we all explained to this nice young gentleman that if you do that again, the next thing that'll fall will be parts of your anatomy. And this was 100 years ago. This is not something new. These idiots, as soon as they got their hands on guns, decided to go songbirds. No.
Yeah.
Apparently the deers were, you know, too risque or something like that, or threatening.
Well, or the deer were gone, because deer populations only return to huntable levels here in West Virginia, for instance, in the 1960s. They had been hunted almost to extinction.
Michael, this guy Michael took me out in Sudbury when I was going there for university, out to go hunting. That, you know, I'll show you how to. I always wanted to find out how do you actually turn critter into meat. I thought, you know, this is a life skill. You should at least be familiar with the process. If you're going to eat meat, get down and dirty with it. It was sort of a test of courage, if you will. Went out. He didn't bag a single thing. He had this big gun. he got me the license, but he says, well, I don't have enough time to train you on the gun, so you're going to have to use a bow. And I said, no, I'm not going to use a bow. What are you going to use? Well, I got this skinning knife with me. Can I use that? Well, oh, it's a jerk. And he goes off, and I hear bang, bang, bang off in the distance. And he just leaves me there where he dropped me off. And I decided, you know, if he came up here, this is probably the center of the range, so the center is a good enough place. And I just started walking upwind, came up on a little field. There's a little deer, you know, stupid thing. Told me what to look for, various parts. Okay, yep, that's deer. That's the female I'm supposed to be hunting, or male I'm supposed to be hunting. Yeah, male. You know, small rack, blah, blah, blah. Right. Walk up the deer. It doesn't smell me because I'm walking upwind. Just stab it in the side of the neck with a bloody blade.
My God.
Hoorah, I'm a man. Wow. I felt so wonderful.
Oh, no. If you told that story among right-wingers, they would, dang, can you show me how to do that?
Man, it's hard to avoid them in Nanaimo now. It's like, Christ, they're a traffic hazard out here.
Oh, yeah.
You got them dancing all over the bloody place. You don't need a gun to kill an animal. You need a rock. I mean, Jesus Christ, we evolved from retards who look a lot like teabaggers. Run up against this bloody thing, chase it down, hit it with a rock over the head a couple of times, and you'd be panting and huffing and broken bones and blisters all over, and you're, I'm a barbarian man. You know, these are not sophisticated people. We did not rise up from effete French college professors. We evolved up from, again, people who look like my Uncle Byrne, who was, you know, more hair than man.
Oh, absolutely. At this point in time, I can just, you're in a very very Conan the Barbarian kind of place, you know, where we listen to the lamentations of the ungulates.
He showed me how to gut it, and I'll tell you, it's one of the reasons I went primarily vegetarian. I'm sort of a vegetarian. Somebody puts food in front of me, I'll eat it. Sort of a courtesy thing, but I prefer vegetarianism. Just because, you know, it has a subtle flashback of, oh, that's how you, oh, you don't
eat. Oh, no, I understand completely. The first time you've seen a deer caped, which is to skin one, and you've seen a deer just hanging upside down by its back legs while not wearing its skin.
Uh-huh.
That is more creepy than a million zombies on Left 4 Dead.
I swear, after that trip, I was looking like that poor kid in the Simpsons episode when Lisa turns vegetarian and they show him the slaughterhouse, but they don't actually show the slaughterhouse. Just he goes in one side, comes out the other way, the side all shuddery and white, and is asking, "Some people eating, say eating meat is wrong." And then the commentator says, "Don't get me wrong, son. That cow will eat you if he had a chance."
Well, I got to admit, Chris, I do have at least a logical or intellectual curiosity, not with regard to vegetarianism, but with like this sort of wild-eyed veganism that presupposes that if we would just close down the chicken plants and quit raising cattle for food, that there would be these herds of happy and contented bovines wandering the prairie. You know, no.
No, it'd just be a place to put a Walmart now.
Right. Remember, one of the earliest accomplishments of humanity as they moved into North Africa, which where the Sahara is, used to be a beautiful and lush green savanna, was people's being able to chase down a cow and kill it. And that's why there's a bull culture, or why there's so many bull references in ancient culture, because it wasn't exactly easy. Absent the gun, it ain't easy. And absent having them having bred them to stand still while you kill them is another thing. You know, think about the murals on the walls at Knossos on Crete that shows the bull leapers.
Six figures, you know, because they were thin and wiry and didn't have a lot of meat on them from chasing all these bloody cows all over creation.
Right.
You don't get a 500-pound obese man chasing after a bull.
Yeah, those stick figures on the cave walls are not abstract representations. That's basically how they saw each other.
Exactly. Ah, it's George. Okay, yeah. I noticed he has a larger calf than most men.
Right. And it was only from being skinny that made them not want to eat each other. No meat on him. Let's go get the slow elk. By the way, when you decide to steal cattle in southern West Virginia, that's the euphemism for them. They are slow elk.
I don't want to know where that came from. I really don't.
Nah, I understand completely. Chris, it's awfully good talking to you. You have yourself a wonderful evening, all right?
You too. Thank you very much for your time.
Oh, it's absolutely a joy. Bye now.
Cheers.
Chris calling from Canada. And like I said, you know, it's the international perspective that really make it, that sometimes we have to rely on, because here in the United States, no matter how hard we try, ultimately we find ourselves being like those two fish swimming in the ocean, and the old fish swims by and says, "Water's nice today, ain't it, boys?" And the two young fish look at him, look at each other after the old fish has swum by and says, "What's this water he's talking about?" Perspective. Perspective is key. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Hey, Preston, what's up?
Full moon, I guess. I just received a photo of the moon from a Facebook friend. And I guess it's a full moon tonight. Does that sound right? The wolf moon, maybe?
I will take your word for it. I have overcast, so I really can't look out the Head On Radio Network color weather window and find out.
Okay. So I heard you mention you're on some drugs. I missed what that was about.
Oh, my insides are in an uproar, and consequently I've been forbidden food for the next week or so. It was that or go into the hospital and get put on IV fluids for a couple of weeks. And yeah, I've got a big old load of Rush Limbaugh medicine.
Like Oxycontin?
Precisely.
Okay. Well, I hope that works out for you.
It works surprisingly well. It just takes away one's sense of confidence in getting behind the microphone and feeling certain that one won't say anything any more ludicrous than what one usually says.
Yeah. You know, I think that's a concern for all of us, even when we're sober, that we might say some ludicrous thing at one point or another. And I think we inevitably will. I mean, we misspeak, and there's a lot to consider. And
yeah, well, see, but I haven't quite gotten to, you know, "I love you, man." I haven't gotten there yet.
That would be okay.
but there's no guarantee I won't. What I've been doing for the last 2 days, and I'm taking tomorrow night off, and I may take a 4-day weekend just to lay down and give this a chance to heal. What I've been doing is, I take my dose and then I don't take any more after noon, so that theoretically I have sobered up by 6 p.m. Eastern time.
Okay. Interesting. And, you know, same with some of the antidepressants. I have friends who've felt they've been really helped by them, and I respect their feelings around that. There are certainly some drawbacks, for sure. So, and, you know, I think a lot of people's insides have been in an uproar, I mean, because of the overuse of antibiotics. You know, I mean, that's a conventional approach that...
Well, did you see this story from Mother Jones, Preston? Kate Shepard, who is a wonderful reporter, posted it yesterday. What kinds of chemicals are in our bodies? There's a new study out from Environmental Health Perspectives.
With the moms, the pregnant women, I mean?
The pregnant women. The study in the bodies of pregnant women, finding that 99 to 100% of pregnant women in the United States tested positive for a number of potentially hazardous chemicals, including DDT, flame retardants, substances used to make nonstick pans, phthalates, a variety of chemicals found in beauty products, and plastics. And that's not even an exhaustive list.
Yep. And, you know, again, there's so many alternatives. You know, that's what makes it even more maddening. It's that, you know, there's this whole field of green chemistry. You know, wooden spoons, you know, going back to some traditions, you know, we don't need these plastic spoons to be heated up on the pans and then releasing these substances and the phthalates and the BPA. Actually, I found a wonderful kids' toy store. I think it's called, like, Green Goods or Green Toys. And they're actually making toys out of recycled milk jugs.
You know, I think that may have been the outfit, Preston, that produced the magic kit for my good friend Steve Trash, the rockin' eco hero magician.
Oh, great.
And all of the magic tricks were based upon recycled materials and had been manufactured in accordance with green standards.
Great. That was the Rockin' Hero.
Steve Trash, Rockin' Eco Hero.
Great. Great work.
Yeah, we grew up together, and He's a dear friend and a fabulous magician. And he goes literally all over the world, working mainly with elementary and middle school kids, just showing them ways to be more sensitive in how they go about living their lives as they grow up, with things like recycling and green principles. And he does it all within the purview of really, really astonishing magic tricks.
Excellent, excellent. Again, what great work. And, you know, doing that consciousness raising, definitely what one sociologist would call a cultural creative. And, you know, so often we hear this is a conservative country and these are red states and all this stuff. But, and that we see the ways in which people are so disengaged politically or despairing. Like you were talking about earlier, with so few people even voting, or more people voting for American Idol. And so we see that stuff. But we don't see, you know, this sort of political engagement you're talking about right now. I mean, and it's just inspiring and heartening to hear.
And that's where you find your willingness to drag yourself out of bed every morning.
There you go. Oh, I'm sorry. And on the cultural creatives thing, you know, we hear about the soccer moms or the NRA dads, NASCAR dads, this other demographic called the cultural creatives, sociologist, a Canadian sociologist actually named Paul Anderson or Paul Ray, studied this group that are like progressively tended people. And he estimates the numbers to be around 50 million or so, and these are people who are accepting of different religions, you know, respectful to other spiritual traditions, multicultural. Maybe they've done organic gardening or buy organic food when they can, support independent artists, either authors or musicians, and doing stuff like you just mentioned, being clowns for the environment. And, you know, all kinds of artful approaches to making real change in the world.
And, you know, I have to mention somebody along the way, Preston, that fits in very nicely with, this topic. I ran an ad at the top of the top of the hour and coming into the 7 o'clock hour, from our good friends at Bubble Genius. You were talking about, you know, there are creative green ways so that we need not subject ourselves to all these noxious chemicals. Well, the queens of that principle are the women at Bubble Genius. See, I still have to work to get the sexism and the privilege. And it's,
you know, we're all in an ongoing, everlasting process of unrooting this stuff and becoming aware of it in ourselves. So, and it can be very humbling, and but yeah, I'm working on it too.
But it's worth going to their website. I run their ads because every now and then we get a care package of really wonderful soaps and lotions and stuff like that from them. As our friend Matt Osborne says, we are in the pocket of big soap.
That's true.
But they're vegan based.
And that big soap is connected to big chemical, and yeah.
Right.
And so this other group is vegan-based, and you said, what was the name of it?
Bubble Genius.
Okay.
BubbleGenius.com. And by all means, if you decide to buy some stuff from them, tell them you heard about it from old Bob. We became good friends at Netroots Nation last year in Vegas.
Oh, good.
One of the better things to come out of our weird little trip. And we've been friends ever since, and we tweet back and forth, and they got a great sense of humor, and they just they're really dedicated to what they do, and they support progressive liberal causes. Another of the people that they are very kind to is Bob Seska. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
No, I don't think so.
He does a once a week radio show that is quite good, and he's a heck of a good blogger.
Bob Seska.
Yeah, Cesca.
Okay, and is that a web-based internet?
Yeah, it's internet-based. It's okay. A podcast.
Okay.
I'm not sure if you can listen live or not, but if you just look up Bob Seska,
that's another example of what I'm talking about, the cultural creatives. There is a progressive movement going on. The Tea Party, they've got us very focused on what the right wing is up to, and they are doing a lot. I've got to give them credit. A lot of them have very committed, active people putting money into it, and not just Koch brothers, but there's a lot of grassroots level stuff going on, and they're making things happen. And, you know, it can seem intimidating. But they see something else going on. I think they see it more clearly than we do, that there is this progressive effort going on in every field imaginable, the women's rights movement, environmental stuff, getting away from agribusiness complexes. And it's exciting. It's very interesting to watch.
And by the way, his website is at bobsesca.com. The name of it is Bob Seska's Awesome Blog Go. Yeah.
Awesome Blog Go.
Yeah, bobsesca.com.
I will definitely be checking that out. I just learned of another kind of cultural creative going on. I mean, you know how they've been going after Van Jones. You know, that's another thing the right wing does. Is kind of.
Yeah, between Van Jones and Kevin Jennings.
Okay.
Because, well, Kevin Jennings is the recovering Southern Baptist gay son of a preacher who is in charge of the Obama administration's efforts to end bullying in the public schools. And people like, what's his name? I always think Norman Bates. Tony Perkins. Tony Perkins. Norman? Yeah. Yes, Mother Bates. Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council or whatever. He don't love America, and he's an enemy of Jesus, and he's an atheist, don't darn believe in government. That kind of stuff. They've accused him of being a pedophile. I think they've hauled out the NAMBLA libel in his case.
Okay.
They attack him with similar. See, that was the OxyContin talking. With the same or similar vitriol and hatred that they use on Van Jones.
You know, Buck just brought up Van Jones a couple days ago once again, and Van Jones, communist, and stuff like that. And, you know, so what if he was? You know, we're a free country, right, Glenn?
Not in Glenn's world.
Right. But, you know, and I guess he was away from the Center for American Progress for a while, but I think Van is back there. And I'm still trying to, you know, connect with his publicist and, you know, get you all hooked up. But we'll see where that goes. I know he's a very busy man. But he also has another ally named, Ibrahim Abdul-Mateen.
I've heard that name.
Okay. I didn't know his name, but I knew a little bit about his book. It's called The Green Dean. The Green Dean, spelled D-E-E-N, and Dean is, I guess it's Muslim, would it be?
Well, it's an Arabic,
Arabic term for a religious path. And anyway, The Green Dean, what Islam says about the environment, and it's very much like the Christian the stewardship movement among some Christians, even evangelicals. And he's networking, you know, really reaching across, you know, skin colors and the faiths and stuff like that. And again, I think the people who direct the programs of people like Beck and Hannity, they see this environmental movement going on. And so they try to, you know, kick the legs out from under it, just like they did with Martin Luther King, you know. I mean, the FBI is a mix, and there are progressive people even in that institution. And I'm very glad they found that bomb in Spokane, Washington.
And I am also disturbed, Preston, by, and Rachel Maddow commented on it last night, I seem to recall, through a sort of drug-induced haze. The fact that it is being spoken of in the for-profit media, my term, not hers, almost not at all.
Yep, David Sirota this morning on AM 760.
And that, and you know, David from Maine referenced it in the program last night. and made mention of the two T-shirts the guy left in the bag.
What were those?
And one of them was a Relay for Life.
Hmm.
Next question.
Hmm.
And of course, the other thing arising out of it, that it's not an isolated incident. Whether it's, you know, just because the for-profit media doesn't cover it, or don't cover it, doesn't mean it didn't happen. And every year, the Martin Luther King holiday is a very dangerous time. Because it brings out the absolute lunatic worst, thoroughly well-armed, violent lunatic worst in the right wing. And this thing has been described by the people who know about these things as having this bomb as having had the capacity to kill a whole lot of people. Now, I don't know what they mean by it, but and frankly, if this was something that was found in, say, Afghanistan, the for-profit media would be all over themselves, Preston, describing it as an IED.
Well, can you imagine if a Muslim person had planted that?
Well, yes, we don't have to, because that story happened in the same, roughly the same neck of the woods. It was in Portland, wasn't it, at Christmas? I know, that's a long way from Spokane, but still, same geographic, well.
Uh-huh.
And what happened? The Christians went and set fire to a mosque when that news came out.
I didn't know that.
Of the bust of the feds busted a young man in one of those stings where the only person who had the capacity to do any harm was the federal agent.
Right. They were leading some vulnerable person along, I imagine.
Yeah, they'd gotten him to say that, you know, he hated America. And they said, yeah. But if you set your bomb off on Christmas, that'll kill a lot of innocents. And, of course, the kid is alleged to have said, that's what I want to do, you know, stupid kid.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what the FBI sort of was doing with some of the King's, you know, rallies and stuff, you know, being disruptive. I think it when where one riot broke out and there was car windows being smashed during one of the King marches.
Yes.
You know, they some of the people within King's community caught the guys and
so, but in the current instance,
real quickly, it turned out they were being paid by the FBI though.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I remember when there was a protest of one of those G whatever number. Meetings up in Quebec, and it turned, and the Quebecois state police got busted for having tried to infiltrate agent provocateur into the peaceful protesters' midst, trying to get them to do violence.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that it's sleazy and it seems to be unending. But what struck me is the fact that on the you know with the current situation, the so-called Portland Christmas bomber.
Uh-huh.
Who had absolutely no ability to do any harm whatsoever, well, people responded by setting fire to a mosque. On the other hand, here's a guy or woman, probably a guy, you know, lone white man, who leaves an IED in Spokane who could have killed a number of people at that MLK parade,
mm-hmm.
and it's crickets.
Yeah. Yeah,
the right wing has not a word to say about it.
Because it doesn't, you know, frame the official enemies the right way. You know, wrong narrative. So we're gonna sit on that one. So yeah, so it goes. But I try to keep up on a lot of it. The Islamic the attacks on Muslims going on. I subscribe to CAIR, CAIR.
Yes.
Their email list, and you know, again, an advocacy group, a civil liberties group, which is relentlessly attacked by people like Sean Hannity. They totally caricature it, you know, call them supporters of terrorists. And
well, oh, I got a story here for you, Preston. You're gonna, well, not love this. You will be appalled by it, but you will not be shocked. I have remarked from time to time on the fact. That the problem with right wingers and teabaggers is that they have this powerful urge, especially the political candidates, they have a powerful urge to ride the tiger. And they have no idea of what it's like once they're on the tiger's back, when all they can do is grab tail and ear and hang on for dear life and hope the tiger doesn't turn and bite. Well, here's a classic case of that. You know, for a couple of weeks now, Chris Christie, the new governor of New Jersey, this thug, hateful, violent rhetoric, nasty, you know, threatens reporters, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this guy has been a darling of the right wing. There was
for public workers, I guess.
Yeah, of course. But he has been a darling of the right wing with the draft Chris Christie for president movement coming up, you know, that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
Well, he made a fundamental mistake. He had to appoint some judges in New Jersey.
Okay.
And he announced 7 judgeship appointments to the New Jersey Superior Court. This was last week. One of the people he appointed was a man by the name of Sohail Mohammed.
Uh-oh.
Yes, you know, Preston. Uh-oh. Mr. Mohammed was to serve on the court in Passaic County. He's an immigration lawyer from Clifton, New Jersey. Among other things, Mr. Mohammed defended Muslims who were snatched up in post-September 11th dragnets by the Department of Justice. Hundreds of Muslims were snapped up. Almost disappeared.
You know, they're preparing yet another dragnet right now for undocumented people under the pretext of border security.
Well, exactly. Pretext indeed, because these Muslims who were snapped up after September 11th were arrested on a false pretense of immigration violations.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority of them had no connection to terrorism whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
So Chris Christie, the governor of New Jersey, appoints Sohail Mohammed as a judge. Well, what happens? Just listen to this. The teabaggers immediately began screaming that Chris Christie was turning New Jersey into a Sharia state.
Oh, God.
I'd
try if I wasn't laughing, you know.
I'm not going to. Well, exactly, but you know what? Yeah, enjoy it. Enjoy it, because, you know, he fostered this hate. He fed them raw meat during an entire political season, and having run out of raw meat, they're ready to consume him. Here's Daniel Greenfield writing a blog post called Governor Christie's Dirty Islamist Ties. New Jersey, the Garden State, has just taken its first step toward becoming the Sharia state. Willing to, and he said Chris Christie is willing to stand up to the teachers' union, but not to the terrorist union.
Right.
It gets better. Have you ever heard of Pamela Geller? She's a real piece of work.
Ralph Nader actually mentioned her mentioned her as a Islamophobe, and he was against, you know, booked, you know, on some program with her. So I have a feel that she's not doing good things in the world.
No, she's not.
Mobilizing resentment like the right wing is always doing.
Yeah, she thinks a lot of her looks, and she does videos of herself in a bikini with firearms and stuff. You know, just gross.
Part of her marketing thing, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Branding. Yeah, it's all branding.
That's why they picked Palin, you know, I think. You know, there was a...
Well, she posted a blog post called Governor Christie's Hamas Pick for Superior Judgeship. And in that she wrote, Governor Christie looked and sounded like he could be presidential. He's not. He's in bed with the enemy. All the other stuff doesn't matter if you don't have your freedom. And then there's Jonathan S. Tobin at Commentary Magazine. He said Governor Christie's appointment of Sohail Mohammed to the court shows that his judgment on the issue of support for terrorism is highly questionable.
Aye.
And another right-wing gang, the Investigative Project on Terrorism, referred to Judge Mohammed as an Islamist who betrays either naivete or calculation. Either is troubling, referring to Christie. And then finally there's Powerline, who said, the attorney's name is Mohammed. First name, Sohail. Sohail Mohammed. Yeah, that's kind of like Barack Hussein Obama.
It sure is. You bet. And, you know, hopefully it will be like Obama, you know, finally getting his position and, you know, getting so much popular support that they had to, you know, get to the office. So that was a victory. And likewise, I hope this judge gets enough support that he gets appointed to this position. And people just kind of have to get used to saying these foreign names and things like that. You know, another way that the faith is smeared is that, you know, it's misogynist aspects, and they certainly do exist. And again, good, you know, effective propaganda doesn't always lie. A lot of the time it omits. And in the case of Islam, actually, if you go back to Muhammad, he had some of the more pro-woman policies, actually, them allowing them to get inheritances and stuff like that. But anyway, there are these elements that certainly are oppressing women in brutal ways, and the right wing talks about that a lot and feigns concern about it because the hypocritical posturing that they do around it is so deceitful. Look at how they treat women's advocates in their own country. You know, for the past 20 years, Limbaugh has been referring to them as feminazis and the nag.
Yeah. Right. This stuff doesn't happen in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
It's created over a period of years, and it is something that has been deliberately created over a period of years, Preston.
And I actually received Ms. Magazine. I am a huge fan of what they're doing, and I was sad to see their radio project not work out, I think, about 4 years ago. You've talked about that, the Ms. Magazine effort to have a radio show, and they kind of did a huge investment, and, you know, there's some other approaches they may have taken with more success. I don't know. But what a valiant effort, though. And boy, was Rush and all that whole gang of thugs. They were just rejoicing that these women would not have a voice. They are sick.
Well, yes, they are. And, you know, I played it on last night's show. Flesh Flimball out there mocking the Chinese premier, doing sort of phony baloney, made-up Chinese. And,
you know,
and along the way, he said the following: Susie Wong, good hole, bada bing.
Yeah. I heard you mention that, disgusted by it, but it was interesting. I caught part of his show today, and he mentioned his routine.
Oh, and he described it as a public service.
Yeah, and before it would have been considered, you know, good entertainment. I think he mentioned Soupy Sales doing his own, you know, Chinese stuff, ridicule.
That was 1962.
Right, we move on. Or most of us do. Some linger stuck in that.
I mean, 49 years ago, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Yeah. 75 years ago, blackface was funny.
Yeah, right. Good, exactly. So I just found it very interesting, though, that he had to bring it up again. He had to go back to that topic, and he was very
and he went back to it. He was defensive, yet at the same time, Preston, he was proud of it.
Yes, in a way, but he's also being shamed on a much broader scale now. And I think he and the people, again, the people who write his show and direct him, I don't think they're completely pathological, you know, that they're that totally oblivious to it all. Not all of them, anyway. You know, even people, again, back to the FBI really quickly, I always wonder, what are some of the impressions some of them get when they're, like, assigned to infiltrate a Quaker meeting, you know, American Friends Service Committee meeting, and they're sitting around, like the Michael Moore film Fahrenheit 9/11 pointed out, you know, they would be eating cookies and, you know, just having, you know, watching documentaries or something. And I bet every now and again, you know, we win some people over, you know. You know, there are the well-known cases like Philip Agee and among others, but I think there are these others that quietly support us. You know, like Obama's Secret Service, a lot of people have been talking about, you know, the potential for him being physically harmed. And I heard, I think it was maybe Alice Walker or maybe Angela Davis talking about that. And, you know, certainly there's risk in life, and especially in that kind of position. But she talked about how some of the Secret Service had become a more progressive organization, and that there are a lot more brothers within that organization who were sympathetic and supporters of him and would use their own lives to protect him. And so even in an institution founded by the likes of Hoover, J. Edgar Hoover, there's this new energy coming on.
And wasn't that convenient today to have the great big announcement of the mob crackdown from the FBI, the largest one-day mob bust in American history. You know, and Eric Holder was all proud of himself. Yeah, that reminds me of the time when John Ashcroft was all proud of taking down all the hookers in New Orleans. You know, if the Department of Justice would get as serious about corporate criminals as they do with small-time neighborhood hoods.
Yeah. I think Michael Parenti, I don't know if you know his work at all. He's been doing great stuff. Super Patriot.
Yes.
It's one of his books.
Of course, my favorite is still The Assassination of Julius Caesar, but yeah, that's me.
There you go. That won a couple book awards, actually. Great piece of history.
And you can also see him lecturing on it. There are YouTube clips, you know, hour long or so.
I'll have to check that out. Excellent. And a couple other quick media resources before I let you go. Tomorrow on NPR's Always Interesting Science Friday, there's going to be a segment on how climate change affects the oceans. Apparently all that, you know, extra carbon, the oceans absorb a fair amount of it and they get more acidic.
Right.
And affecting coral reefs, and it's a very sad situation for sure. Anyway, they're going to have an hour-long segment on it, and so people might want to check it out. And also, just in the past year or so, there's something that is entertaining that, you know, we see all this kind of violent, so-called entertaining stuff. And, you know, maybe it can have its place in a sort of theater, you know, Shakespearean or whatever.
Yeah.
But there's this other sort of entertainment that's very popular as well that can be very humane. And I don't know, do you ever catch The Office by chance?
I've seen it a few times, yes. Not the original, but the one with Steve Carell, yes.
Yeah, yeah. I'd seen it a few times, caught pieces here and there, and wasn't really so intrigued by it. But I've been watching it more closely the past couple months, and a lot of it is wacky comedy and...
It's lunacy. It is. It's just nuts comedy.
And some evenings it's not very funny at all.
I gotta tell you, there have been times that I've seen it that it was painful to watch. It was so profoundly uncomfortable. I don't know.
Yeah.
There were times when I was a kid when watching Jethro Bodine was painful. Just because even contemplating, I think, as a child, that there were people that dumb out there was frightening.
Yeah. Well, I actually heard Terry Gross interview Steve Carell. And again, in his movies, I really don't like at all. I've seen parts of one, and I was just not into it at all. And again, I wasn't really watching The Office, but when I heard him dialogue with her about it and her talking about it, and they also talked about it in some of his movies, I was like, you know, I should probably look again at this, which is basically the meaning of the word respect, you know?
Right.
But you know, last night I think there are parts that were uncomfortable, and it, you know, at times it is wacky and all that stuff, and then it can be, the uncomfortable thing, last night the character Steve Carell outed employee, and there's this whole, they had to have meetings about what's homophobia and stuff like this, so they were dealing with a real issue, and through comedy, And ultimately, I think it was in a very tender and humane way. There will be these moments where it is totally wacky, but then real quickly it will become very kind of serious.
Yeah.
And almost tear-jerking.
That's where the discomfort comes in, because I think there's such there's no clear break between the two. But
yeah.
But you know, comedy does teach when it's great comedy. Look back to the ancient Greek comedy, depending on how you pronounce it, Lysistrata or Lysistrata.
I remember that movement that developed around it when the Iraq War propaganda was ramping up.
And for good reason, because that play was written during the Peloponnesian War, when the Athenian democracy was tearing itself to pieces in a war with Sparta. And the premise of the thing is that the women of Athens decide to tell their men that there will be no more sex until the war is over, and thereby and then the war ends.
Or at least was it no more sex, or was it no more sex with them? Because I imagine maybe there were some.
I'm not sure. I don't remember it that well, but a point well
either,
taken.
Either solo sex or, you know, lesbian relations,
right?
Or other forbidden things, right?
Exactly.
Exactly. So great. Very interesting. Yeah, thanks for bringing up that history. And, I'm sure you have some other callers.
Well, I've got a couple other blinking lights, but it's awfully good to hear from you, Preston. I appreciate the upbeat style that you always bring to the calls. And knowing your passion for films and documentaries, do keep an eye out when you can for, The Last Mountain.
The Last Mountain. I actually posted that, the link to the trailer up on my own Facebook page, so I will definitely be keeping an eye out for it.
Yeah, it's screening tonight out at Sundance. So
yeah,
I can't wait to hear what kind of response it gets.
I'll probably end up getting on their email list, so I'll know when the DVD comes out. So.
And, well, one of the cool things is when I get to get on the Lib boat in February, one of the people who's going to be on there is, of course, Bobby Kennedy Jr.
Great.
And so, you know, I'll get to...
Which boat is that?
The Progressive Voices Cruise.
Oh, great. Where's it going?
The Eastern Caribbean.
Enjoy.
Grand Turk, Puerto Rico, U.S. Virgin Islands, and Bahamas. So it's going to be a week-long vacation, and it really is going to be a vacation. The slave drivers in the chat room were all over me last night. No, Bob, you have to do a show every night. No, Bob doesn't. Bob take vacation.
Yes.
Bob drink out of coconut shells with umbrellas in top.
We have a right to leisure. We gotta fight, you know, for our right to leisure as well.
Hey, hear, hear. Preston, you have a wonderful evening. Good hearing from you.
Likewise, you too, Bob.
Take care. Bye now. And that is the Horns resident optimist. That's Preston calling from Denver. Before I go to the next phone call, I got to get to this before the show ends. I got to play you this audio. This is audio from a video clip that I have a feeling Glenn Beck tried really hard to disappear. He failed. Every now and then we tend to forget that this is, after all, the internets. This is one of those moments. Granted, I'd like to have a little bit longer clip. I'd like to have more context. But this will
do. The radicals that you in Washington have co-opted and brought in wearing sheets, clothing, change the pose. You get the ends. You've been using them? They believe in communism. They believe and have called for revolution. You're going to have to shoot them in the head. But warning, they may shoot you.
Yeah, that's really enough, isn't it? That is, of course, that's the Beckerhead talking about shooting people in the head, referring to liberals and progressives as communists. Nice, huh? Now contrast that with a little low-rent hissy that took place on Mediaite. Headline, Liberal radio host Mike Malloy wishes he could suffocate Rush Limbaugh. Now, for those of you who have seen this, I hope you paid attention to who the hat tip went to. It went to someone called Radio Equalizer. Once again, these people who are out there who operate with pseudonyms, not because of the need for safety, but because they prefer to hide in the shadows and take gratuitous cracks. Well, the Radio Equalizer is one of those. The Radio Equalizer is an apologist for right-wing hate radio filth, but grabbed a clip of Mike Malloy talking about Rush Limbaugh. Check it out, because most of you probably heard this on the show, because most of us are big-time Malloy listeners. But check this out. There's a reason. Here we go. In a minute.
During Olbermann's this program tonight on MSNBC, right towards the end, he had a special comment, and he made some very good points about how nobody has taken responsibility for the public discourse and the fact that it's been shredded and made violent, except two people, and he mentioned himself and John McCain. I think he had a statement immediately after the bloodbath that was caused by right-wing talk radio and television 10 days ago. I think McCain came out a couple of days later. And Olbermann listed 8 or 10 people, I don't know why he had me in that list, but who have not repudiated violence. And I'm not sure how to respond to that. Not that anyone cares what my response is, but the only thing I can say is the rhetoric that comes through me is the rhetoric of rage. And have there been violent images? Of course. Rush Limbaugh choking on his throat fat. To me, that is not a threat. I wish I could, but I can't reach into his throat and jiggle up his throat fat so he suffocates. I can't do it. As far as Dick Cheney's a mass killer. I mean, by definition, it doesn't make any difference what you think he is or think he isn't. His policies going back to the 60s are those of a mass killer. I don't pick obscure government officials and try to demonize them because they're working for social justice or trying to, to use a quaint term, help people out. that's not what I do. So I respectfully disagree with Keith Olbermann. I don't feel like I deserve a place on his list at all. The rhetoric that comes from me is rhetoric that is inspired by the rage that generates in me because organizations like Keith Olbermann's employer, not Olbermann, but his employer, NBC, or ABC, or CBS, I mean, they're all guilty, refuse to do anything except try to find false equivalency.
Wow, okay, let's go back. Let's hear this one again.
The radicals that you in Washington have co-opted and brought in wearing sheets, clothing, change the pose, you get the ends. You've been using them? They believe in communism. They believe and have called for revolution. You're going to have to shoot them in the head. But warning, they may shoot you.
And I do that for a reason. Because there is difference between theater, which is what you heard from Malloy. Because Mike didn't say, go out, find Rush Limbaugh, reach down his throat, and jiggle up his throat fat and make him choke to death. Beck, on the other hand, did say, you're going to have to shoot people in the head. I don't even necessarily know what it means to jiggle up someone's throat fat. I don't even know if that's physically possible. But I do know goddamn sure that it is possible to get borderline fringe-assed, hyper-radicalized, violent individuals to get their shooting iron gun, their, you know, their penis extension, and go out into the world and shoot people in the head. How do I know that? Because it happened. Because it happened, and because right-wing, multi-gun-owning maniacs like Travis Corcoran thought it was a good thing. One down, 534 to go. Assassination is a legitimate tool. David in Maine reminding me that the radio equalizer is Brian Mahoney, and that his whole reason for breathing out and breathing in again is to stalk liberal radio. In short, Brian Mahoney, the radio equalizer, is a big, steaming turd. Just is. About 13 minutes before the hour. And we will, just a reminder, first of all, thank you very much, because, let me see here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people have stepped into the shoes of 28 members of the Thrifty 250. We are out of last week's hole. We completed the first half of January's fundraising, and now we are $20 on the, or, $30. $30 on the way toward completing this week's fundraising. So thank you very kindly. A reminder, I will not be on the air tomorrow night. I can tell that just tonight has taken a bit of a toll. And I'll go ahead and say that I may not be on the air Monday night. If I can be, I will be. But I'll definitely not be on the air tomorrow night, and may not be on the air Monday night. It is absolutely imperative that I give myself a chance to heal. And some of that just involves laying on my butt in bed and sleeping and giving my innards a chance to live a life of indolent leisure. So that's the plan. What else is out there? What do we want to finish the week for all intents and purposes with? Well, let's see. I've got it here somewhere. All I've got to do is find it. Oh, yeah, here it is. The language. This goes back a couple of days. This is Nixon's old hatchet man, Pat Buchanan, talking about Sarah Palin, Glenn Beck, and Flush Flembaugh on the McLaughlin group.
What was it about President Obama's Tucson eulogy this week that differentiated from other eulogies of this kind?
Because it was much more than a usual eulogy, John. It was a eulogy for the six dead, a celebration of their life, a celebration of bravery, an Irish wake in a way, the president responding to his audience like it was a rally speech.
Yeah, because we all know that Obama is an Irish name, right?
but it was also a stern or fairly stern admonition, especially to the far left in this country, which has been, quite frankly, conducting something of a lynch mob against Glenn Beck, against Sarah Palin, against Rush Limbaugh.
See, he said it. There's the language. No, it is not a lynch mob against that hateful... No, I will not use the Howard Stern word. That hate-filled idiot in Alaska, or not exactly recovered junkie in the form of Glenn Beck, or the other not recovered junkie in the form of Flush Flimball. It was not a lynch mob. Lynch mobs involve night riders and people in sheets and pillowcases who call them things like Kleagle and Grand Dragon. There is no Sarah Palin, Glenn Beck, or Rush Limbaugh lynch mob, you sickening old right-wing tool, Pat Buchanan, you. No one came for them in the night. No one wrapped their body in chains and an old fan from a cotton gin. Nobody did that, Pat! Nobody's gonna do that! Our side doesn't do that. But that never stops a tired, disgusting, putrid old right-winger from alleging it, does it? Lynch mob. Pat Buchanan, in those few words, spat on the memory of every human being who was ever tortured by a violent mob to death, hanged, beaten, drowned, burned, what have you. Because lynch mob is just a phrase in Pat Buchanan's safe little lily-white world. It has no independent reality of its own, and the only time he drags it out is if some right-wing hate bag happens to be criticized for fostering hate with stuff like this.
The radicals that you in Washington have co-opted and brought in wearing sheep's clothing, change the pose, you get the ends. You've been using them? They believe in communism. They believe and have called for revolution. You're going to have to shoot them in the head. But warning, they may shoot you.
Yeah. Criticizing that filth constitutes, in Pat Buchanan's world, a lynch mob. Sure. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Will from Chicago here, Bob.
Hey, Will, what's up?
Right. Do give your voice a rest, and also let me make a quick pitch for the Horn. Why should you support the Horn? Because you can have dialogue based on fact with a variety of opinions where people treat each other with the respect and dignity that I would demand in a classroom of sixth graders.
I'm proud of that.
Yeah,
thank you, Will.
I mean, it's something to be proud of, that we can have a reasonable dialogue. I might not agree with you or others on every issue, but at the end of the day, we can respect each other. Instead, we have people like Glenn Beck saying that people who disagree with him politically are communists or socialists or fascists, when quite clearly Glenn Beck wouldn't know a communist from a Smurf. Here's a clue, Beck, Smurfs are blue. But instead, we have a rhetoric coming from someone who wants to create an enemy, to create a demon, and say, it is your job to slay the demon, save the world, follow me. I am sorry. I have heard of delusions of adequacy, but it seems that Beck and several of his colleagues have delusions of godhood.
I think you're right.
They seem to think that they are the Messiah. And no one I have ever heard of who has aspired to that claim has ever categorize an entire group of people by belief. They might have said, well, the Romans are wrong, or that we must throw off Roman rule, or that we need to change the world, but to say an entire group of people are evil and you must rise up, I mean, this is wrong. And as for Pat Buchanan using lynching, with all due respect, Mr. Buchanan, if you projected any more, the Motion Picture Academy would have to charge you a license for all the projection you are doing.
Here, here. Here, here, Will. Thank you very kindly. You have a great evening, all right?
Have a great evening. Hang in there. And guys, remember, the horn does need your help, so please, give it some help and help give Bob something positive to think out while he's resting those golden pipes of his.
Thank you kindly, Will. Bye now.
Bye.
And an email before we go out. I got to share this. It comes from Michael, otherwise known as Kid A, from the chat room. Why the meme that there's no proof Jared Lee Loeffner was directly influenced by Sarah Palin, Glenn Beck, etc., is so much beside-the-point bullshit in 420 characters or less? You shout fire in a crowded theater. There's no fire. A stampede for the exit begins. A deaf person in the theater does not actually hear you shout fire, but joins the surge toward the exit. Seems only natural, right? It just so happens that the deaf person tramples someone to death. Are you, who shouted fire in the crowded theater, still morally and legally culpable for that death, even though the trampler did not, in fact, could not hear you? Obviously. You know what? I would love to use that in the closing argument of the trial of Sarah Palin for accessory before the fact to murder in the first degree. Because that's the kind of argument that would send that hateful, disgusting harridan where she belongs, to prison for the rest of her natural life. And that's the program for this evening. Thank you very kindly, and thanks to Will for helping out with the request. And thank you all. You five who responded so kindly and so generously. Thank you very, very much. We at this point we only need $590 between now and tomorrow, and we will have met January's third week fundraising goal. Thanks go out to everybody who makes all of this happen. Thank you to our chat room moderator, Lottie. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy, who turned me on to the Glenn Beck clip, by the way. Thank you to John Fox and Ben Birch, who have worked so tirelessly to get things back to normal. It takes a lot of work. It takes a ton of work behind the scenes to make all of this go. And I hope you realize that. Thank you to our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne, osborneinc.com. He has an interesting view on today's call to arms rally in Charleston as compared with the memorial for Judy Bonds this past Saturday at Crooks and Liars. Go and have a look. Thanks to our op-ed columnist, Reverbo. Thanks to my head writer, David, in Tennessee. Ongoing thanks to the fine, hard-working, brave people who proved it again today. The hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks from Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. Many thanks. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next.